Hey, good morning, everyone. So happy to be here with you today. We'll call this meeting to order and begin with a roll call, please.
All right, good morning. Commissioner O'Malley.
Present.
Commissioner Hart.
Present.
Commissioner Jackson.
Here.
Commissioner Kelly.
Here.
Commissioner Lee.
Here.
Commissioner Lopez.
Here.
Commissioner Kalmick is not in yet. Commissioner Nothoff.
Here.
Commissioner Ketchum.
Here.
Commissioner Wilson.
Present.
And Chair Harmon.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Great. Thank you very much. All right, before virtual meeting procedures, I'll turn it over to our chief counsel to report out from closed session, please.
Thank you, Chair Harmon. Yesterday afternoon, the commission met in closed session. It received litigation information and advice and took action on the following cases: Bookout versus California Coastal Commission and Hodian versus California Coastal Commission. The commission also received litigation information and advice on the following cases in a matter of potential litigation: Sable Offshore Corporation versus Coastal Commission, Ruby Falls Fund LLC versus California Coastal Commission, and City of Fort Bragg versus Mendocino Railway. And that concludes my report.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. I'll turn it over to Chris for virtual meeting procedures, please.
Good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at cal-span.org. If you have internet access and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person, through the Zoom platform, or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission's webpage. Paper forms and a scannable QR code for paperless submittal are available on the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission's agenda webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comment may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on each day of the meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comment are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on a regular agenda item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have internet access, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. When it is your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone or provide instructions on how to unmute yourself on the phone. And Madam Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
Apologies. Sorry. Thank you very much. Now we will move to the agenda changes, please.
Good morning, Chair Harmon, Vice Chair Hart, and Commissioners. I'll go ahead and go over today's agenda changes. Item 9A is move to consent. This is a Humboldt County LCP amendment to update the county's density bonus regulations. Item 11A is move to consent. This is the City of Pacifica LCP amendment to establish outdoor commercial regulations. Item 13A is move to consent. This is the City of Morro Bay LCP amendment to update height and slope standards. And finally, item 20A is moved to consent. This is a permit application 526-0015-A1 for Baywatch Inc. in Venice. And that concludes today's agenda changes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Ms. Gray. All right, now we will move to general public comment. Thank you.
All right, for members of the public, I'll be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it is your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes during general public comment at the discretion of the chair. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload, and this may take a moment. To speed up this process, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you'll be moved back to attendee mode. For members of the public present in the room, I will call your names in the order that they appear on our sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and introduce yourself when you approach to speak. There is a raise your hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. So today for general public comments, we have a total of 18 speakers signed up, including 4 in the room. We'll start with our in-person speakers, Lance Schulte, followed by Michaela Coates, Alex Ferrin-Mignona, and Mitch Silverstein. Lance Schulte, go ahead.
Thank you very much and good morning. I have a very, very simple request for you, but it's a very important request. The Carlsbad LCP is going to be coming before you this year, and what's being proposed is the most critical, the most commented on item of that LCP amendment request is the Ponto Park issues and the coastal issues at Ponto. What we're finding out is that staff, the city staff or the Coastal Commission staff is proposing to bifurcate that issue from the rest of the LCP, even though they're very interconnected in very significant ways, dealing with both coastal recreation and low-cost visitor accommodation, land use issues that are specific to Ponto but also related to the rest of the city. And they're moving that agenda item to next month's meeting in July, 200 miles away in Ventura, while the rest of the Carlsbad LCP is going to be considered in San Diego in October. We request, a very simple request, that the Ponto LCP issues that have been segregated or bifurcated out of the LCP issues for Carlsbad be held at the same day in the same location in San Diego as the rest of the LCP. They're interconnected. They're interconnected on some very critical issues, and over 8,000 petitions have been submitted to the City of Carlsbad and the California Coastal Commission regarding the citizens' concern on this issue. This is a high priority public participation issue and public concern and citizen issue, and it should not be bifurcated and it should not be shuffled off to Ventura 200 miles away over a holiday weekend to discourage public participation. That's not what the Coastal Act is about. So it's a simple request. Just basically put the two meetings, if you're going to keep them separate, but have them at the same meeting and have them in San Diego. That's all we're asking. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next three speakers are from Surfrider. We have a handout that's going to be handed out. First is Michaela Coates, then Alex Ferrin-Mignona, and Mitch Silverstein. Go ahead.
Could you turn the mic? We do have a presentation associated.
Okay, it's a shared presentation. Then Silver, presentation for Silverstein. Give us a second.
For taking home, since we have slides too. No, you could leave it, but we have slides too. Thank you.
All right.
Good morning, Chair Harmon and Commissioners. My name is Michaela Coates, and I'm Surfrider Southern California Regional Manager, here to update you on OCTA's efforts to armor South San Clemente's irreplaceable beaches to protect its rail line. Surfrider commissioned Bob Battaglio, a respected coastal scientist with decades of experience, to produce two reports on OCTA's existing and proposed armoring, the effects on its beaches, and the potential for nature-based alternatives. Next slide, please. His first report covers Cypress Shores, the beach between the world-famous Trestle Surf Breaks to the south and San Clemente State Beach to the north. Between 2021 and 2023, OCTA used emergency permits to drop 27,000 tons of boulders across this stretch, and the result is that a once walkable beach has been reduced to a pile of rock. The waves break directly onto the boulders, access is blocked, and the connection to Trestles in the south is gone. The armoring has also degraded wave quality at Cotton's Point, the northernmost surf break at Trestles, and reflection off the rock ruins the waves, and surfers face a dangerous wall of rock instead of a sandy exit. Next slide, please. But the results or the report's most significant finding is actually that OCTA's armoring is counterintuitive. The boulders don't make the railroad safer, they actually make it more dangerous. As sandy beaches absorb and buffer wave energy, rocks instead reflect that energy, scouring the seafloor and carving an underwater trough. As the trough deepens, bigger waves break closer to the rocks, which calls for more rocks, which creates the self-reinforcing cycle, pulling the ocean's wave forces closer to the rail line, which Battaglio has documented evidence of. So staff is now negotiating a follow-up CDP to formalize this armoring, and Surfrider's position is that the beach must be restored and at minimum the footprint of the armoring dramatically reduced. Next slide, please. And I will pass it off to my colleague, Alex.
Good morning. I'm Alex Ferramignona, Coastal Adaptation Manager for the Surfrider Foundation. Battaglio's second report looks just north, where OCTA proposes to continue and expand armoring. OCTA calls it Area 4, but book clearly, it's the southern half of San Clemente State Beach. In the images, you can see Area 4 and Cypress Shores from the north and south, along with some wayfinding. OCTA first tried to emergency permit up to 33,000 tons of boulders across 2,000 feet of this public beach. The commission denied it. Thank you. Now staff are negotiating a regular CDP for a boulder revetment or seawall. OCTA has agreed to a one-time sand replenishment, but Battaglio concludes that's nowhere near enough to offset decades of compounding beach loss. An armoring here would trigger the same self-defeating cycle Michaela described. Next slide, please. But Area 4 differs from Cypress Shores in a very huge way. It still has a wide beach with a vegetated sandy berm that shields the tracks and helps rebuild the beach after storms the way natural dunes do. OCTA's proposal would trade that functioning feature for more rock. Battaglio concludes armoring could be avoided here in the near term in favor of a nature-based adaptation strategy, as is being invested in other San Clemente beaches. Here's what it could look like. Dune restoration is viable on beaches that are about 150 feet wide, a threshold this beach already hovers around. Paired with sand replenishment, a restored dune system here would work with the existing berm as layered defense. A sandy beach slope for wave run-up, followed by dunes to buffer higher wave energy, and then the existing berm as a backstop. Layered nature-based protection. A healthy beach with functioning dynamics is the best protection for infrastructure. Next slide. Thank you so much. I'll pass it over to Mitch.
Good morning, commissioners. Mitch Silverstein, State Policy for Surfrider, here to bring it home. Michaela and Alex covered the situation and our position, so I'll close with Battaglio's recommendations, as well as reiterating the conclusions we've drawn from the report. And that photo, that's Bob Battaglio right there on site. For both sites, first, document the armoring properly. It was nearly impossible to reconstruct OCTA's full permitting history across Cypress Shores and Area 4, and some of that armoring may still be unpermitted. The commission and the public have a right to that record. Second, require OCTA to maintain a beach in front of any armoring. We oppose armoring, but it's far less harmful with a beach in front of it. Third, expand monitoring. OCTA's current monitoring is too narrow. It should cover ecology and ecosystem services like recreation, access, and surfing, the way that the Coastal Commission does. Next slide, please. Now going to Cypress Shores, where we've lost the beach due to the armoring, Battaglio concludes we need to evaluate whether we can reduce the footprints. The footprint of the revetment. Those boulders were dropped very haphazardly under emergency permits and have spread seaward, making the impacts worse. Our position is that footprint can and must be reduced and the beach restored. Next slide, please. Now moving on to Area 4, or San Clemente State Beach. As Alex said, we need to do some things to restore that beach instead of armor it. Battaglio concludes that we should investigate restoring natural sand supply from the railway that the railway now traps through the drainage arroyos and use that to expand the existing berm. Also, widen the beach with nourishment paired with native dune restoration. This is our position. These must be implemented and monitored before any consideration of hard armoring. And then next slide. The big one, and this goes without saying, is that we need to assess relocating the rail line as soon as practicable. Only realignment resolves the underlying conflict between protecting the rail and preserving the beach. That corridor was closed nearly 9 months in 2023 due to storm damage and bluff failure. With sea level rise, it only gets worse. Each foot multiplies the threat exponentially, and flooding that's rare today becomes routine within our lifetimes. Thank you for your continued support in saving Southwest Seas beaches from endless boulders. A couple notes. The handouts are just for you to take with you. They don't summarize just his findings, but they summarize Surfriders' positions informed by those findings. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one more in-person speaker, Adam Leverins, and then our first three Zoom speakers are Walter Lamb, Dan Stejink, and Lucia Casalinuovo. Adam Leverins, and we have your presentation. Give us a moment to bring it up.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Again, I really appreciate opportunity to be before you in person in a small venue. Thanks for all the travel you do that allows that several times a year for me. At your meetings last month, as well as yesterday, you heard from stakeholders in Newport Beach about the California State Lands Commission benchmark rates, which is rates they set for the recreational use of sovereign lands in various regions of the state, and this assures adequate compensation to the people of the state of California for the use of those lands. As we've all heard from state lands, they have the experience and expertise to do this. They generally do it about every 5 years. It's data-driven with local data from local marinas, and the Southern California Category 1 rate is for Ventura, Los Angeles, Orange, and San Diego counties. The benchmark rate also removes local political influences and some of the corruption we've seen in appraisal processes in Newport Beach. And when I speak about corruption, this is documented. It's not just hyperbole. The city seems to, as some of you have heard for a couple years, not want fair and equitable access. They want more pay-to-play access, which a lot of people would lose their access under. The flyer that I've got up here has been submitted at the last two city council meetings and the first stakeholder meeting for these matters, the 27th of last month. Generally, agenda materials with the city will get linked online and people can view them. The city hasn't done that with this information. And at these meetings, they're spreading misinformation and not allowing people to see this. These are having to be printed out and handed to people. At the meeting on the 27th, they told me there weren't accommodations to display this on a screen, yet the city and state lands could display information on the screen. And the fact that I'm not supposed to talk about this locally is kind of indication to me that it might be too good of an idea. And if you're hear poo-poo on this idea from people, please open your minds. I know staff is very busy and can be manipulated. And just be open. Thank you.
Thank you. Now moving to our Zoom speakers. We have Walter Lamb, followed by Dan Stejink and Lucia Casalinuovo. Walter Lamb, go ahead. We're loading up your presentation.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Commissioners. Walter Lamb, representing the Bayou Wetlands Land Trust. I want to touch on two issues today related to the Bayou Wetlands. I spoke 2 months ago about the Southern California gas well abandonment sites and how SoCalGas wasn't really doing anything to revegetate those sites with native habitat. If I could have the next slide, please. And that, you know, because of that, a lot of invasive weeds were growing up, and those will take over the site if there is not some kind of action. Next slide, please. This is our restoration site that we worked with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. This was one you also voted on. You know, mitigation for a fence that was in the wetlands. This is coming along very well. You can see native alkali heath, native seaside heliotrope. Next slide, please. And so there is some good news is that one of the well abandonment sites, Department of Fish and Wildlife allowed us to bring out some volunteers to pull some weeds. But really the point is that SoCalGas is the responsible party for this. And I just want to reiterate, you know, it's unfortunate, but they are going to try to do as little as possible, going to do the absolute minimum that they think they can get away with. And so for the next well abandonment, you know, I'm hoping to work with your staff to beef that up a little bit. In the meantime, we're just going to keep monitoring this up. Next slide, please. We don't have a lot of time to get into this, but there's a fairly new microhabitat at Biona. It's called the non-tidal marsh that is the result of a hydrologic policy change where more water is being allowed from what's called the freshwater marsh into the ecologic reserve. And we just recently had young black-necked stilts and other young birds. But that marsh over the period of about 2 weeks disappeared. And it's a mystery as to how the freshwater marsh is being managed and how that's impacting the ecologic reserve. Next slide, please. And these were slides from 2019 that your staff gave about some of the water features. One more slide. And anyways, we'll come back with this, but we could use some help getting to the bottom of how that all works. Thank you very much.
Lucia, I just muted you. You unmuted early. Next will be Dan Stedjink, followed by Lucia Castellinuovo, and then James Kubiniak. Dan Stedjink.
Thank you, supervisors. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Excellent. And I should have said commissioners. My name is Dan Stedjink from the beautiful city of Pacifica, where our pier is actively collapsing into the ocean as we speak. I'm calling today to urge you to stop hosting Coastal Commission meetings at the Oceana Hotel in Half Moon Bay, California. Last month, Governor Newsom urged the state to boycott Chevron stations due to price gouging. K&N Properties owns the Oceana Hotel and adjoining shops at Harbor Village. K&N Properties was created to facilitate the permitting of petroleum stations owned by Chevron across California. K&N Petroleum is now owning a series of Chevron gas stations that have been renovating fuel stations without public notice, without proper soil testing and remediation across California, including within 600 feet of the median high tide line at Highway 1 and Lindemar Boulevard in Pacifica. Another issue is on May 7th, 2025, I asked the Coastal Commission, I suggested two excellent potential commissioners, Supervisor Jackie Spear and Supervisor David Canepa. Less than an hour later, I got an angry email from an applicant, Ray Mueller, Supervisor Ray Mueller, who had complained about my contacting the press, asking them for simple controls that would ban corruption like campaign donors from receiving real estate contracts with San Mateo County. Mr. Mueller rents his office from KN Properties, Keith Nurhan. Mr. Mueller received $95,000 in independent expenditures from Chevron. Chevron beneficiaries are also his largest donor group as he sits on the Air Quality Management District and makes Chevron decisions every single month. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Lucia Castellinuovo, James Kubiniak, and Kimberly Larrick Kurz. Lucia Castellinuovo. Lucia, it sounds like you have another device playing the audio from our meeting, and it's providing a lot of feedback in our room. Can you mute your other device?
I'm sorry, I cannot hear anything. Can you hear me?
It looks like you have two devices logged in. I'm going to try removing the other device from the meeting. Okay, let's see if that works. Okay, I removed the other device. We should be able to hear you clearly now. Try.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
You removed me from the seminar?
You had two devices in. I removed the other one.
Yes. Good morning. No, I only have one device. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. We can hear you.
You can hear me. Good morning, then, commissioners. I'm here again to kindly request that you hold a review of the Oceana Dunes SVRA. You are out of compliance because according to the original permit, you are supposed to hold one every year. And I really wish to know why it's not happening. Maybe somebody from your staff can write me and explain why you're not holding an annual review. It has been 5 years since you held the last review, 21, when unanimously you banned driving on Oceano Beach and Dunes. Thank you. That was an extraordinary determination. However, unfortunately, the court struck it down. But there is more than one way to skin a cat. One, submit recommendations to San Luis Obispo County to amend its local coastal plan, which is in violation of the Coastal Act. Two, hold a review and lower the number of traffic on the beach and dunes down to nothing. You don't need to ban traffic completely. The courts said you don't have the authority, but you definitely can still significantly reduce the number of vehicles allowed so to protect the creek and reduce air pollution. Three, let them drive on their 800 acres, but withhold the permit to drive on Oceano Beach. 5 years ago, you determined that the driving on Oceano Beach and dunes destroys them. But since then, the destruction has continued, and you have done nothing. We requested that you at least schedule a review, which is your duty, and is 5 years due. The quiet title suit filed by the off-roaders a few years ago has been dismissed, so they do not have the historical right to drive on our beach and dunes. Therefore, you can still stop that. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Next, James Kubiniak, Kimberly Larrick Kurz, and then Noah Suarez Sykes. James Kubiniak.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is James Kubiniak. I'm an architectural designer. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. I'm an architectural designer who has worked on major projects for Frank Gehry in Los Angeles and currently for Nike in Oregon. Through my education and professional experience, I understand the responsibility that comes with building on environmentally sensitive sites. I'm here to express my opposition to the proposed residence at 501 Sandpoint Road, Carpinteria. My primary concern is that the scale of the project is fundamentally incompatible with the site. The buildable area above the sea and wetlands is extremely limited, yet the proposal includes a large residence, extensive docks, decks, and a pool. For a property surrounded by dune mat, habitat, and wetlands, this level of development is excessive and out of proportion to the landscape. My second concern is the impact on one of the last remaining native foredune systems along the stretch of the coast. Even with the mitigation measures and buffers, this project introduces permanent disturbances to the sensitive dune and wetland habitats. More importantly, it establishes a precedent for future development in similarly constrained coastal environments. Finally, the long-term hazards are being understated. The site faces sea level rise, erosion, and storm impacts within the lifespan of the structure. Approving a large permanent residence in such a vulnerable location increases the likelihood of future environmental damage, debris, and public costs associated with coastal retreat. Even with reduced footprint, the proposal is simply too large and too permanent for such a fragile site. I respectfully urge the Commission to prioritize long-term coastal stewardship and deny this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Kimberly Larrick Kurz, followed by Noah Suarez Sykes, and then Joelle and Mallard. Kimberly Larrick Kurz. Okay, you got moved. You should be able to unmute as soon as you're in. Kimberly.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Great. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Kimberly Larrick Kurz, and I urge the commission to reject any proposal to build new development at 501 Sandpoint Road, Carpinteria. The reason is simple. The site has already demonstrated it's not a sustainable location for permanent structures. A house once stood there on the lot in the 30s, and today that location is underwater. The ocean has made clear what maps, studies, and photographs increasingly show that California's coast shorelines are changing, erosion is accelerating, and sea levels continue to rise. Approving new construction on that site has already been lost to the ocean, would ignore the physical reality of the coastline. It would place future property owners, public resources, and emergency responders at risk. It could also create pressure for shoreline armoring and other protective measures that may harm beaches, public access, coastal habitats, and neighboring properties. The Coastal Act requires careful stewardship of California's shoreline for present and future generations, and that responsibility means recognizing when a site is simply no longer appropriate for development. Building in an area that has already succumbed to coastal erosion and inundation is not adaptation. It is repeating a mistake that nature has already corrected. The Commission has an opportunity to demonstrate leadership by acknowledging the realities of the coastal change and ensuring that public policy reflects long-term coastal resilience rather than short-term development interest. For these reasons, I respectfully ask that no new development be approved at 501 Sandpoint Road in Carpinteria. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next, Noah Suarez-Sykes, Joellen Mallard, and then Christina Navarro. Noah Suarez-Sykes.
Great, tremendous. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Lovely. Okay, good morning, commissioners. My name is Noah Suarez-Sykes, and I'm an organizer for Better Neighbors LA, a housing coalition focused on protecting long-term housing by regulating short-term rentals. I'm here today to once again ask the Coastal Commission to consider the benefits of a hosted-only approach to regulating short-term rentals throughout the coastal zone. In the coastal zone, unhosted short-term rentals have driven out residents of coastal towns and hollowed out once vibrant communities. Corporate-owned entities continue to buy up housing to flip into expensive luxury short-term rentals, driving workers that provide necessary visitor services farther and farther out of the coastal zone. Just the other day in Los Angeles, we saw an apartment building right on the Venice Boardwalk with 60 rent-stabilized units, each of which is capable of housing an entire family, turned entirely into a grouping of illegal short-term rentals run as a luxury boutique hotel. And that's not even the only one on that block. Many of these unhosted STRs are also several hundred dollars a night, far out of the reach of the average family, and this isn't equitably providing coastal accommodation. It is taking housing that people need and converting it into a commodity for the wealthy. Choosing hosted only as a regulatory method for STRs means protecting housing along the coastal zone while also allowing visitors to be embedded in their community. Hosted STRs tend to be significantly more affordable than unhosted, allowing for visitor accommodation while also not removing more housing from the market. Cities throughout California have found great success in hosted only STRs, including in some coastal cities like Santa Monica, which managed to have a surfeit of visitor accommodations while also protecting its residents from having their housing turned into corporate investment vehicles. We ask the Commission, as you hear future regulations on STRs in the coastal zone from a variety of towns, do the right thing. Support hosted-only short-term rental regulations to protect our coastal residents and preserve our housing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Joellen Mallard, Christina Navarro, and then Terry Welsh. Christina Navarro, please accept being moved to panelists. Joellen Mallard, go ahead.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Joellen Mallard, and I live in Marina Del Rey. I've worked as a cook for over 15 years, and I'm a proud member of Unite Here Local 11. I want to be honest with you. You may not typically hear from people in Marina Del Rey about housing affordability. I live in one of the most expensive parts of the California coast, and I know that. But I grew up differently than where I live now. And I remember what it felt like to look at places like this and think, you know, that'll never be for me. Fortunately, somehow it worked out and I'm here and I'm grateful every single day. What I can't shake though is that thinking about people who won't ever have the opportunity to make it here. Not because they didn't work hard enough, not because they don't deserve it, but because we're allowing the housing that could have been theirs to get swallowed up, listed on a platform, and then priced for long weekends and not for working families. Some of the units in my neighborhood are dark most of the week. They're just inventory. And that's what this is really about. It's not about data or vacancy rates. It's about whether the coast gets to be a place where people can actually live or whether it just becomes a collection of properties that a bunch of wealthy investors rent out to other wealthy people, and the rest of California is just forced to watch from the outside. I was fortunate enough to get into my community, and I love it. I want the door to stay open for others. So please support policies that keep homes as homes and not short-term rentals. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Christina Navarro, Terry Welsh, and then Leslie Purcell. Christina Navarro. Christina, I see you're in as a panelist. You should be able to unmute. All right. I'm not seeing any motion. Terry Welsh, we'll continue with you and come back to Christina. Terry Welsh.
Hi. Can you hear me? Good. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you, commissioners. My name is Terry Welsh, and I am president of an organization called the Coastal Corridor Alliance, formerly known as the Banning Ranch Conservancy. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I want to talk about Randall Preserve, a property formerly known as Banning Ranch. And as you can see, it's located in Orange County at the mouth of the Santa Ana River between the cities of Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, and Costa Mesa. And in 2022, Banning Ranch went from being a privately owned oil field to a publicly owned, permanently protected coastal open space. And this real estate transaction was handled by the Trust for Public Land and made possible by a very generous donation from Frank and Joanne Randall, hence the name Randall Preserve. The title was immediately transferred to a state agency that you're familiar with, the Mountains Recreation and Conservation Authority, or MRCA, best known for their stewardship of the Santa Monica Mountains. Now, this real estate transaction was 387 acres. It did not involve a separate 11 acres owned by the local school district, the Newport Mesa Unified School District. So you could say that these 11 acres, while publicly owned, are not permanently protected. And as much as the local community would love to see them become part of Randall Preserve, the school district has announced that they are in early discussions with a developer to build several multi-million dollar Ocean View Newport Beach homes on the site. Next slide, please. Now here's a separate view looking out towards the ocean and Newport Harbor, and you can appreciate where the school district 11 acres is. And as distressing as it is to the local community to think that these multi-million dollar homes are going to essentially be built in Randall Preserve, what's even more concerning to us is what's going on with the property right now as we speak. Now, I'm out of time. I'm going to have to come back and tell you about it. So stay tuned, commissioners, and I very much appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Back to Christina Navarro. Christina, if you're able to, please unmute.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, buenos dias. I want to speak Spanish. Buenos dias, comisionados. Mi nombre es Cristina Navarro. Soy miembro de United Here Loco 11. Soy una recamarera por 23 años. Vivo en Santa Mónica. Antes vivía en el sur centro de Los Ángeles, que me tomaba hora y media para llegar a mi trabajo. Ahora ese tiempo lo utilizo para estar con mi familia, pero también vivo en un apartamento de bajo recurso que quisiera que nuestros compañeros y nuestra comunidad viviera cerca de su trabajo, porque hay muchas personas que viven en Pandel, viven en Orange County y tienen que viajar casi 3-4 horas al lugar de trabajo. Y no es posible, yo que he andado tocando puertas para campañas, estén muchos apartamentos que tienen candados de Airbnb, y que nuestra comunidad y nuestros trabajadores de recamareros que viven cerca de nuestro lugar de trabajo, vivan cerca de su trabajo. Y también quisiera que apoyen, porque vivo en una ciudad muy bonita que es Santa Mónica, a mi edad, ya de que tengo ahorita, y quisiera que apoyen la política de restringir las rentas cortas a plazo. Gracias por todo y espero que ayuden a estas personas porque vive muy lejos.
Thank you. Chris, just a moment. Commissioner Preciado has generously offered to give us an overview. Thank you.
Cristina Navarro is a resident and a resident of the city of Santa Monica and is a member of Unite Here. She's inviting the commission to consider her life experience. She's been an employee of Unite Here for 23 years, and she has the good fortune of being able to not have to commute anymore. She lives in Santa Monica, works in Santa Monica, and she'd like to encourage that other workers have the same opportunity instead of dedicating their lives to a 1.5-hour commute, that they have the ability to stay in housing, socialized housing in the community. And as such, she's encouraging us to work to restrict short-term rentals and encouraging us to ensure that housing is available. She indicated that in campaigns she has been part of, she's seen a lot of doors locked and that those doors seem to be available to Airbnb. Thank you. I think that captures her sentiments.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Ms. Navarro. Chris.
Thank you. Next, Leslie Purcell, and then I'll call names that we weren't able to find on the Zoom meeting. Leslie Purcell, go ahead.
Good morning, Commission. I'm Leslie Purcell. I am in Ventura, and I'm speaking about your next meeting, which will be here in Ventura, I believe. So I'm hoping that you will arrange a site visit to the Surfers Point Managed Retreat Project, which has been very interesting to watch over the several years that they've been working on it. And I think it would be wonderful for you all to observe and have somebody that was involved with the project to meet you there, and possibly the public as well. We could be there. It's a very, very successful project in most ways, and enjoyed by the public. The second thing I wanted to mention is that there is this decommissioned power plant along the coast in Oxnard, which is just south of us here in Ventura. And it is very visually obvious. If you are a little bit above the horizon, you can look out across the whole channel and you see this big blot down there on the coast. And it's, I think, decommissioned in 2018 and was bought a couple, actually in 2022 by an LLC. And there was some indication that they might remediate and restore it for habitat value. But I also found online that the city of Oxnard is advertising it as a place for filming. So I'm wondering if the staff could possibly look into this and give us some more information and an update on what is going on with that site. And I think if you all are staying at the Crown Plaza, you'll be able to see this area. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We had three other speakers that we weren't able to find. I'm going to call your names. If you hear your name, please raise your hand so we can find you on the Zoom meeting. Patty Judd, Lionel Mares, and Margaret Malloy. Again, that's Patty Judd, Lionel Mares, and Margaret Malloy. We haven't been able to find you. If you could raise your hand. All right, I'm seeing no hands raised. Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. And thank you, as always, to the public for participating and sharing your testimony. I will return to the commission. Commissioner O'Malley.
Thank you, Chair. Just wondering if we can get maybe a little bit more information, maybe from staff, on the Carlsbad and Ponto situation, please. Thanks.
Yeah, so staff has been working closely with the city, as well as meeting with Mr. Schulte on the Carlsbad LCP amendment. Part one of the amendment, which is planned for hearing in July, is a project-specific LCP amendment that includes affordable housing, visitor-serving commercial, and open space. For efficiency's sake, the city has requested this portion of the amendment move forward as soon as feasible. Staff anticipates that all coastal resource present on the site will be reviewed and adequately protected through this initial amendment under the existing LCP. The second part of the amendment, which is an overhaul of the city's entire LCP, is expected to go to the commission in October for hearing.
Any other? Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right, we will continue on. That brings us to item 5A, please.
Item 5 is the administrative calendar for today, which includes only one item by the Ventura Port District. We are not aware of any opposition to this item and are asking the commission to approve the consent calendar today.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any public comment?
No commenters.
Any ex partes? Thank you. All right. Commissioner Wilson.
I'm ready to move consent.
Second.
It's a motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner Kelly. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none.
We didn't.
Oh, okay. Do four or more object to any item in the administrative calendar? Okay, seeing no objections. So approved. Thank you. Now we'll move on. Thanks.
That takes us to item 7. Item 7 provides for applications to be moved from regular calendar to the consent calendar. There are four items that we are recommending be moved to consent, and those are item 9A, a Humboldt County LCP amendment to update the density bonus provisions of its LCP. Item 11A, the City of Pacifica LCP amendment to establish regulations for outdoor commercial uses, including outdoor dining areas. Item 13A, a City of Morro Bay LCP amendment to add height and slope standards to its LCP. And item 20, a permit amendment by Baywatch Inc. in Venice to make changes to previously approved filming activities. The applicants are in agreement with the staff recommendations on these matters, and staff is not aware of any opposition to the items to be moved to the consent calendar today. Staff would note that there is an addendum to the staff report for item 9A, the Humboldt County LCP amendment, which includes minor language changes to the suggested modifications. Staff recommends that the commission vote and approve this item.
Okay, thank you. And just to clarify, there's nothing on regular consent. These are the items pulled from regular calendar to consent. So looking at my colleagues, are there any ex partes to report? Okay, seeing none, any public commenters who wish to speak on any of these items?
Yes, we have two speakers across these items. I'll start by noting that for item 11A, we have one person available for questions. For item 13A, we have Shirley F. Shirley, I'm moving you in as a panelist. You should be able to unmute and begin your comment. All right, Shirley, I see you're in, and I just saw you unmute. You should go ahead.
Okay, good morning. Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you so much. Good morning, distinguished commissioners. As a resident of Morro Bay, I'm speaking in support of the Morro Bay LCP amendment containing the height and slope standards, and I want to express my agreement with the executive director's determination as presented in the report. I urge you to concur with this determination and move it forward today in approving this amendment containing the bluff top height standard, as it will continue to protect the public viewshed of our beautiful Morro Rock, our bay, and our working waterfront as it's been for over 40 years. I would appreciate your serious consideration of this and support. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Now for item 20A. We had one person signed up to speak, Carrie Andrews, but we aren't able to find them in the Zoom meeting. Carrie Andrews, if you're there, raise your hand. And we also had one person available for questions.
Okay.
All right. I'm seeing no hand raised. There are no other speakers for the all the items on consent.
Great. Thank you very much. So I will return to the commission. Comments, questions, a motion?
I'll move consent.
Second.
Great, thank you. That's a motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner Kelly. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing no objections, the consent calendar is approved. Thank you. All right, let's continue right on to item 8, the Deputy Director's Report for the North Coast District, please.
The Deputy Director's Report for the North Coast includes 2 waivers, 1 permit amendment, and 1 permit extension. I would note that we did receive comments regarding the permit extension, which is for a Humboldt Bay Harbor District project that includes improvements to 2 seawater intake systems, as well as other infrastructure upgrades. Comments were received from the Water Board and a member of the public relative to the underlying permit itself. Staff responded to the Water Board with information about the conditions of the CDP and contacted the interested member of the public who indicated that he was opposed to one of the projects contemplated under the original permit. Neither party objected to or provided a basis for objection to this time extension, so we continue to recommend approval here. In addition to the 4 regular items, today's report includes final certification review for the Humboldt County Wireless Telecommunications Provisions, which was approved by the Commission last December. The county acknowledged and accepted the Commission's suggested modifications for its Wireless Telecommunication LCP amendment, and the Executive Director has determined that the county's action meets the requirements for certification. This certification is a report out only. Staff is not aware of any opposition to the other matters, and we're asking whether commissioners object to any of the items in today's report.
Okay, thank you. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
No, just one available for questions.
Great, thank you. Do 3 or more commissioners object to any item in the Deputy Director's report? Commissioner Wilson.
I have no objection. I just want to thank the staff to help our county get through our cell phone tower regulations. Really appreciate it. I want to just remind folks that even cell phone towers that have fake trees or water towers still look better than cell phone towers, and the regulations to implement that in your community are really easy to do. So, and they don't add a ton of cost. So just a recommendation. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Seeing no objections, the commission concurs. Thank you. Item 10, please.
Yes, that brings us to item 10, which is the North Central Coast District Director's Report. This month, we are reporting 2 waivers, 1 immaterial amendment, and 1 extension. We did receive 1 objection for 1 of the waivers, which is for a project in the city of San Francisco to install a replacement water transmission pipeline near Lake Merced. The commenter suggests that the project would have an adverse effect on coastal resources, for which a CDP would be more appropriate. However, the project is about 1 mile inland of the shoreline, and the waterline in question would be subsurface under city streets, where we don't expect any significant coastal resource impacts, including as the city has included a series of construction BMPs that can sufficiently contain any impacts that do not occur to the roadway area. So we respectfully disagree with the commenter and continue to recommend the waiver for this project. Past that, we are not aware of any objections or controversy regarding the other matters in the DD's report. And so the question is whether 3 or more commissioners object to the items in the report. And if not, then the commission will concur.
Great. Thank you. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
Yes, we have 1 person who wishes to speak, Eileen Boken. Eileen, you should be able to unmute your phone now.
Eileen Boken with Speak. Following up on my written submission dated June 5th, opposing the executive director's de minimis waiver for the SFPUC water transmission pipeline, file 2-26-0131-W. The SFPUC proposal is part of a major infrastructure project, which will cost hundreds of millions to billions of dollars, and which would likely have an adverse effect on the coastal resources. Therefore, a de minimis waiver is inappropriate. Per Coastal Act, Public Resources Code, Section 30624.7, Sunset Parkside Education and Action Committee is strongly urging the Coastal Commission to require a coastal development permit for this proposed project. As I've stated previously, SF Planning Department has publicly stated that it believes Coastal Commission requirements are bureaucratic and a waste of time. SF Public Utilities Commission staff have publicly stated that it would take 10 to 20 years to obtain a coastal development permit for an ocean water pumping station for an independent emergency firefighting water system. This is a blatant misrepresentation. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll also just note that we have two people from SF Water on Zoom and available for questions as well. There are no other speakers.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll look to our staff to see if they'd like to respond or...
Yes, thank you. And just briefly, we continue to recommend the waiver for this project. It won't result in any significant impacts. And the commenter appears to be talking about a different project in this case. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Return to my colleagues. Comments, questions, or looking for any objections? Okay. Seeing none, the commission concurs. Thank you. We'll continue, please.
Yes, that brings us to the Central Coast District Director's report. And this month, we are reporting one waiver and one immaterial amendment. We did receive an objection to the immaterial amendment, which is a state parks project that provides for replacing a series of public access trails, boardwalks, and stairs that were damaged in the 2023 winter storms at Asilomar State Beach in Pacific Grove. The comments suggest that the project is not LCP consistent in terms of coastal hazards and archaeological resources and suggest that it be conditioned for debris removal. With respect to coastal hazards, the project is an appropriate hazards response, including in order to retain access to and along the coast in this area. The project also includes dune restoration for the prior trail locations and appropriate construction BMPs. Regarding archaeological resources, State Parks archaeologists identified sensitive cultural sites in the area and identified measures to redirect access away from those sites. In addition, State Parks also consulted with local tribes and incorporated their guidance on avoiding any impacts, so we think that issue is adequately covered. As to the commenter's request that the project be expanded to require the removal of derelict infrastructure and debris, we want to note a few things. The first is that that type of activity is beyond the scope of the project, including that it's beyond the scope of the funding provided for the project by FEMA. It is also not clear to what specific infrastructure and debris the commenter refers and where it may or may not be located in relation to the project. So while staff agrees that such materials, if present, are likely better removed, and while staff notes that State Parks shares a commitment for doing so when it is feasible if such materials are present, it is not within this project, and any such requirement would derail the important public access improvements inherent in the project. And finally, the commenter asks that the commission find the project consistent with the LCP in addition to the Coastal Act. On this point, staff would note that the project spans Coastal Commission and city jurisdictions, where both are the standard of review, each for different components of the project. Staff inadvertently limited its consistency findings to the Coastal Act in the amendment notice, but notes that the project is also LCP consistent and thus modifies the staff recommendation to include LCP consistency as well. All told, we continue to believe that this is a positive project that is consistent with both the Coastal Act and the LCP, and we continue to recommend the immaterial amendment. Past that, we are not aware of any objections or controversy regarding the other matter in the DD's report. And so the question is whether three or more commissioners object to the items in the report, and if not, the commission will concur.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
No speakers.
All right, great. Do three or more commissioners object to any item in the deputy director's report? Seeing no objection, the commission concurs. And we will continue on to item 14A, please.
Thank you. Yes, that takes us on to item 14A. And Bree Guingana, who is our newest planner in the Central Coast District Office, will be giving our staff presentation. And we do have a PowerPoint.
Thank you so much, Sarah. We'll just wait for the PowerPoint to come up. Is it up in
give
the border?
Us a, give us a moment.
Okay, no worries.
Sorry, we missed that. I need to get the presentation over really quickly. Give me a moment. Another 30 seconds or so. And there we go. Sorry about that.
Perfect. Thank you. No worries. Good morning, commissioners. Item 14A is an appeal of a San Luis Obispo County CDP approval for a new single-family residence located on a vacant parcel in the unincorporated community of Los Osos in San Luis Obispo County. Los Osos is located south of the city of Morro Bay and north of Avila Beach and is a primarily residential community of around 15,000 people. Slide 1 shows Los Osos where it abuts Morro Bay with the project location at the bottom right of the image. Next slide, please. Slide 2 shows the county-approved project, which is an approximately 2,000-square-foot single-story home, including an attached garage, driveway, and septic system on a vacant residential lot. Next slide, please. The appellant contends that the county's approval raises LCP consistency questions related to water supply to serve the development, arguing that there is not sufficient water and thus that the project should be denied. Staff respectfully disagrees. The Commission has spent considerable time over the past few years evaluating Los Osos' water supply issues, including groundwater health and any coastal resource concerns associated with withdrawals. Staff has concluded that the current best available science demonstrates that the Los Osos groundwater basin is not in overdraft, that withdrawals are not resulting in any significant coastal resource harm, and that there is sufficient water to serve new water-using development. Specifically, the Los Osos Basin Management Committee, the entity created to comprehensively manage and monitor water resources to stop overdraft and seawater intrusion, has shown that the community is using less water than the basin's calculated sustainable or safe yield. This is defined as the amount of water that can be used without advancing any seawater intrusion and meeting all applicable drinking water standards. And based on this information, the Commission in 2024 approved updates to the LCP, reflecting that the community's water supply is healthy enough to support a modest amount of new development, subject to the strict monitoring of the basin going forward to ensure that it remains in a sustainable yield state. The Commission has also affirmed the finding that there is an adequate water supply to serve new development in Los Osos in 9 recent appeal actions since that time, based on contentions nearly identical to this appeal from the same appellant. Thus, the Commission has determined that there is an adequate and sustainable water supply for Los Osos to serve new development as defined and required by the LCP, and applies that understanding to this case as well. Next slide, please. Before concluding, I'd note that we distributed an addendum on Wednesday responding to comments received from the appellant and others on the staff report. The addendum provides some clarifications in response to the comments, but the comments received, like the appeal, are nearly identical to the past comments from the appellant and others. The addendum does not change staff's conclusion, which remains that the Commission should determine that the appeal contentions do not raise a substantial LCP conformance issue, and that the Commission should decline to take jurisdiction over the CDP application for this project. The motion and resolution to implement staff's recommendation are found on page 4 of the staff report. This concludes staff presentation.
Okay. Great, thank you very much. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing no ex partes, we will open the public hearing. And Chris, I will turn it over to you.
Yes, we have four speakers signed up to speak on this item. We have Kurt Mammon, Chuck Sasena, Patrick McGimney, and Cheryl Gardner. Wait, is this an appeal? Okay, we'll have the appellant first, which is Patrick McGimney. Patrick, give us a moment as you're moving in as a panelist. And Patrick, you should be able to unmute.
Yes, can you hear me?
Hi, we can hear you.
Hi, this is Lindy Dowd in for Patrick McGibney. He has a medical issue he's dealing with.
Ma'am, are you representing the appellant?
Yes, I am.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. As with our other recent appeals, this is not about one residential home's new water use. It is the cumulative effect of all the new development now being approved by the county and this commission, in spite of the BMC's recommendation to have 0% growth, including several large residential homes and the 10 full-size manufactured homes that are now going in at Morrow Shores. Just a few years ago, your staff sent a forceful letter to the San Luis Obispo County Director of Planning and Building, threatening legal action if the county didn't stop issuing CDPs for new water-using development over the Los Osos water basin, which this commission considered to be in overdraft with continued seawater intrusion. No metric benchmarks have since been reached to refute that correct assessment, though the county did submit metric data that neither the State Department of Water Resources, the Los Osos Basin Plan, nor the court's stipulated judgment accept as legitimate benchmarks of sustainability. The sustainable yield is a calculated estimate only, not a measured benchmark. Your staff claims to be relying on the best science available, the transient model, but there is nothing in the data produced by it that even hints at a sustainable basin. On the contrary, it concludes that pumping at the current average rate of 1830 acre-feet a year with the current well placements or spatial distribution is causing seawater to intrude further into the basin, and the primary cause of seawater intrusion is a basin in overdraft. The transient model says this isn't sustainable. The new sustainable yield of 2,000 acre-feet a year, agreed upon for 2026 by the BMC, has a major caveat. It relies on a system of optimized pumping, which could take up to 5 years to implement and will entail moving wells further east at a cost of millions of dollars. Please also consider that the basin yield metric must be derived by using a 20% uncertainty buffer. To achieve that with a sustainable yield of 2,000 acre-feet a year, the extraction rate must be 1,600 acre-feet a year or less, and that's not going to happen. 40% of our basin is unmetered and estimated, a big reason why it's been in overdraft for over 40 years and continues to be so. When staff respectfully disagrees that the basin is in overdraft, it is disagreeing with the California State Department of Water Resources, which states on every monitoring report that this basin is in critical overdraft. There is no data to show otherwise. Any additional intensification of use will only worsen its condition. For this reason, we ask that you take this and all future appeals under jurisdiction until actual data, or as you want, conclusive evidence shows the Los Osos water basin to be sustainable. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next, we have the applicant, Kurt Mammon. Kurt, I see that you're in as a panelist already. You should be able to unmute.
Sorry, I was having trouble unmuting.
All right, go ahead. We can hear you.
Great. Greetings, staff and Commissioner Harmon. My name is Kurt Mammon, resident of Los Osos, representing myself and my wife, Renee Mammon, as the applicants on this issue. We are longtime residents of the Central Coast and Los Osos residents, this year marking my 49th year in the area and our 26th year as Los Osos residents. We brought the property under consideration today, along with the adjoining separate house 20 years ago, with the hope of selling the existing house and building a new home on the vacant lot to raise our children. The youngest has just graduated from San Francisco State University, but we are still in the existing home and still working on building that hoped-for new home. We bought the property because it was outside the sewer prohibition zone and was considered buildable if you obtain a habitat conservation plan and an incidental take permit for the Morrow shoulder band snail. We immediately spent several thousand dollars installing a water meter, which we had been dutifully paying for monthly for nearly 20 years. That adds up to over $6,000. Next, with the help of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, countless research and writing hours, over 100 I would estimate, and thousands of dollars of biological and archaeological reports, we successfully filed an HDP and obtained a 10-year ITP that happens to be expiring this year. Thankfully, we should be able to extend it. In 2014, we were told that even though we had an existing water meter that was on, that we needed a Title 19 retrofit certificate to be able to build to offset the water demand for a new home. We purchased a 900-gallon retrofit certificate for $18,000. At the cost of several thousand dollars, we designed a home with an ADU, only to be told by the county that they could not support an ADU due to the water issues in Los Osos. So at the cost of several more thousand dollars, we designed a smaller home without an ADU, applied for a MUP/CDP in the fall of 2021. So here we are today, 20 years after purchasing the property, dutifully following federal, state, and county regulations, nearly 5 years after paying over $16,000 for this MUP/CDP permit under consideration today, and after saving 950 gallons a day for Los Osos since 2014. We respectfully ask you today to support staff's recommendation to find no substantial issue on this appeal and uphold the county's decision to approve our decades-long effort to build a simple, single-family residence on an infill lot in Los Osos. While we have lost the opportunity to raise our children in this home, being able to build a new home on this property is still important to our future and would mean the world to us. Thank you, Commissioners and Chair Harmon, for your consideration of our project today. And thank you for the Commission's positive impacts for the state and people of California over the years.
Thank you. I was notified that our other two speakers were not qualified to speak on this item, so there are no other speakers on this item.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, I will close the public hearing and return to our staff to see if there's a response.
Thank you. Yes, I'll just quickly note that we continue to believe that the staff report and addendum addresses the appellant's concerns regarding the adequacy of the community's water to serve this project. And I'll also note that staff and this commission have spent considerable time and effort understanding and evaluating these complex water issues, including in both the approval of the Los Osos Community Plan 2 years ago and what is now actually 9 hearing items since then, where essentially all of these same issues have been discussed and debated. So none of this is new, and we'll leave it there for now. And if you have any more specific questions regarding water, we're available to go into more detail, as is the county's director of groundwater sustainability. Thanks.
Great, thank you, Ms. McGregor. All right, I'll return to the commission. Comments, questions, a motion?
Make a motion.
Sure. Vice Chair Hart.
I move the commission determine that appeal number A-3-SLO-26-0012 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under section 306603, and I recommend a yes vote.
I'll second that and just note that I appreciate that the work that has been done by the county and the commission staff to really examine this issue. It's very important, the groundwater availability, and I am familiar. We've heard this before a lot, and I take each one seriously, but I want to support the staff on this one.
Great. Thank you. That's a motion by Vice Chair Hart, a second by Commissioner Nadoff. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, no substantial issue has been found. Thank you. Okay, item 15A, please.
Yes, that brings us to item 15A, which is a CDP application for the Bayside Landing mixed-use project in Morro Bay, and we do have a PowerPoint. Great, thank you. Agenda item 15A is the Bayside Landing mixed-use project. This is an application to redevelop an existing two-story office building, to demolish three vacation rental units, and to construct a new two-story building in its place, and to construct a new commercial building just south of that. The converted and new buildings will accommodate a mix of commercial uses, including a takeout restaurant and a 10-unit hotel. The proposed development is shown in the rendering here on slide one, with the converted building shown to the left in dark brown, and the new buildings shown to the right of that. As you can see here, the project also includes a series of public access improvements, including a new 10-foot-wide lateral segment of the Harborwalk public access walkway on the bay side of the project, public restrooms, and a new publicly accessible floating dock, and a public pocket park, with the park shown to the far right here where the Harborwalk curves to meet the Embarcadero. Next slide, please. Slide 2 shows you the southern Morro Bay area with the iconic Morro Rock at the bay entrance noted. The project site is located at the southern end of the prime visitor-serving Embarcadero area of the city that fronts directly on Morro Bay itself. Next slide, please. And slide 3 zooms in on the site, which is inside of the red polygon here on the slide. The existing site includes an office building, three vacation rental units, and the southernmost end of the site is currently vacant. Next slide, please. Slide 4 shows existing conditions, with the existing two-story office building in the image to the left and the vacation rental units and vacant lease site shown in the images to the right, all with the Embarcadero in the foreground. Note that there is currently no public access on the seaward side of the buildings. Next slide, please. Slide 5 shows a simulation of the proposed project as seen from the Embarcadero side. Again, the existing office building would be converted into ground floor commercial spaces with a takeout restaurant, with three new hotel units and a lobby on the second floor, shown on the right in this image. To the left of that is the new two-story structure containing 7 new hotel units, for a total of 10 standard operating units, where 15% of the rooms would be capped at lower cost rates. And to the left of that is the new one-story commercial building. The project will also include a 10-foot-wide lateral accessway along the entire bay frontage of the site, which would be part of the Morro Bay Harbor Walk and would connect to the existing Upcoast Harbor Walk, thus filling a gap in this stretch of the California Coastal Trail. The project will provide other public access amenities, including 3 public restrooms, a new public park, which will serve as the southernmost end of this primary visitor-serving stretch along the city's waterfront, a publicly accessible floating dock with 3 finger slips, and a kayak rental shack, where the applicant has proposed to implement a kayak program aimed at providing free kayak tours to lower-income and underserved youth and their families, representing a unique public access opportunity for community members in the San Luis Obispo County. The proposed lower-cost rooms, in conjunction with these other public access benefits, is consistent with the Commission's overarching goals and intent in administering Coastal Act and LCP public access and recreation provisions, and will constitute a significant increase in public access at this site. Before concluding, I would note that we received correspondence raising a few objections to certain aspects of the project that I will address for the record now. First, the commenter suggests eliminating the elevator and second floor raised walkway due to potential impacts on public views. The lobby for the hotel is proposed to be located on the second floor, thus the elevator is necessary to provide ADA access to the lobby and to meet building code requirements, and the second floor raised walkway is necessary to connect the elevator shaft to the lobby. Furthermore, the proposed project meets the LCP's height, bulk, and scale requirements, and the project incorporates an articulated roofline with varying building heights and architectural variety. Thus, the project is not expected to result in significant adverse impacts to public views. Second, the commenter raises concerns regarding the required parking associated with the proposed uses. The Commission has historically calculated parking requirements for sites located along the Embarcadero in Morro Bay by determining the parking requirements and provisions related to the site's legal historical uses versus the proposed uses. Here, the existing parking demand for the site was allowed to be accounted for on street and in public lots, and that demand is for 14 parking spaces, whereas the proposed project would require 15 spaces. Thus, the proposed project is short by one parking space, but the city's approval requires the payment of a $15,000 parking in-lieu fee as mitigation for the difference of one parking space and continues the allowed use of on-street parking and in public lots as before. As to the commenter's request that an ADA parking space be provided on site, the parking lot nearby and across the street has an ADA spot, and it is consistent with past commission practice to rely on such lots in that way on the Embarcadero, including to avoid requiring parking on waterfronting sites where higher priority uses can make use of that space, like for public access. I would also note that the city is currently in the process of updating their waterfront master plan, which is intended to address circulation and parking along the Embarcadero, including for ADA purposes, and the CDP is also conditioned for the applicant to prepare a transportation demand management plan, which is required to detail programs or incentives for employees and hotel guests to use alternative transportation. Thus, the proposed project won't result in significant adverse impacts on parking in the surrounding area. And finally, the commenter suggests that the existing cottages should be maintained on site due to their cultural significance. Not only were the cottages not found to be historical for the purposes of CEQA, but the units are quite deteriorated and would not be feasible to restore. However, the applicant is proposing to incorporate salvaged materials from these buildings into the retail building proposed to be located at the southern end of the project site, and the project will incorporate shiplap siding, stained glass, and colorful accents on the trim and doors to emulate the colorful palette and maritime designs currently found on the existing units. Thus, staff does not believe that the alternatives suggested by the commenter would result in a superior project. I also want to note that there was an inadvertent error in the staff report that states that the project would provide 3 public restrooms. However, the project will provide 2 public restrooms, one on each side of the project site, so we are changing the recommendation to correct that error. Next slide, please. In short, we consider this to be a good visitor-serving enhancement in addition to the Morro Bay Embarcadero area. We worked closely with the applicant on the parameters of the project, and the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation. We recommend that the commission approve the conditioned coastal permit, and the motion is on page 4. That concludes staff's presentation.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes? Okay. Seeing none, I will turn it over to Chris.
Thank you. We have 2 speakers on this item, Paul Gillen, who is here in person, and then Chris Munson from Morro Bay on Zoom. Paul Gillen.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of my project. I'm the applicant. We worked very hard with the staff to meet all the conditions and provide what we think is a very professional, enhanced project. We've also addressed the low-cost accommodation issue as best we could. This is only a 10-unit development, and we've agreed on 15% of the rooms be provided for low-cost accommodation. However, the conditions for low-cost accommodations don't really seem to be able to address who takes these low-cost accommodations. There's no way of verifying or quantifying how people would qualify. And the way rooms are advertised, it would be very difficult to see if low-cost or low-income applicants can actually stay in these rooms. So in discussion with the staff, we came up with another alternative. We believe we should contribute to low-cost facilities, and we've provided some water sports activities with our special conditions that would allow for unserved or low-income people to enjoy water sports from our facility. 100, four groups of 100 per year, and that'd be a direct contribution for low-cost and underserved people to enjoy the water sports in Morro Bay. So I hope you can approve my project. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Chris Munson.
Thank you. I'm Chris Munson. I'm the harbor director for Morro Bay. We really support this project and the coastal staff for their hard work in getting this together. It brings a lot of public benefit. And if you've ever walked down Morro Bay's Embarcadero, as you get farther down the Embarcadero, it kind of just peters out and dies. And this will actually provide a good connection to the areas farther down the Embarcadero, which leads to the Tidelands Park and the boat boat ramp. Kind of mimicking or echoing the developers' concerns on the low-cost, the affordable element to this. That condition does pose a challenge for a lot of the developments on the Embarcadero. To be able to make up for that, a lot of times it requires more intensive use, and in practice, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's just first come, first serve, and it's actually illegal to verify if somebody is in fact of a lower income rate. So. I had noticed Coastal Commission had posted a list of all of the establishments that have this requirement statewide. There's 10 listed, and three of them are in Morro Bay. So 30% of all of the affordable accommodations in statewide are in Morro Bay, and I completely empathize with Coastal staff. They're trying to meet the requirements of California law. It just seems like in practice there's a better way to do that. But overall, we're very supportive of this project, very supportive of the staff report. And we're excited to see it get done. Thank you.
Thank you. No other speakers.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I'll look at Ms. McGregor if there's anything you'd like to add before we turn to the commission.
Yes, just briefly, we agree with the points that were made by both the applicant and Mr. Munson regarding providing the low-cost rooms to underserved communities. The CDP is conditioned to require the applicant to advertise these rooms to underserved communities. And again, we agree that this is a difficult nut for us to crack, and we haven't quite gotten there. But we're hoping with that special condition, we can get a little bit closer. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. All right, I'll return to the commission. We'll start with Commissioner Preciado.
So a couple of things. I think one of the opportunities we have in these new developments is, in fact, the ADA opportunity. And I'm very pleased that we agreed to keep the elevator and that the elevator contributes to those of us who may need that kind of accommodation to be able to participate. I'm interested in understanding better why not have the ADA parking space in the immediate facility. Just wondering how far away is the ADA, particularly if you're checking in to hotel accommodations and you have different kinds of needs as a ADA as an ADA hotel guest. You may have different requirements, so having to go even further for a parking facility is not always so easy. And if you consider also some of our seniors, even if they're mobile, distances become issues. And so I'm just interested in how that waiver became available. On the other hand, this project seems to be an excellent new addition to the area, and it seems to be like a new improvement, and I'm just fascinated by the discussion of keeping recycled materials from the existing. It's just a fascinating way of meeting the goals of the Coastal Act, that kind of recycling has to take place. I think the facility looks like an excellent addition to that area. But if you could comment back on the parking situation, and again, I think the project and the elements of the project seem to be reasonable. I'm just interested in understanding that. And I apologize my unique sensibility to it. I'll have you note that I just parked right outside because there was a parking space right there, and it facilitated my access to this instead of sometimes when I have to go into a very large hotel and meander through all kinds of places to get to facilities. I'm just interested in the response.
Yes, thank you for those comments. So there is an ADA parking spot that is located in the parking lot just south and across the street of the project site. I believe it's about 75 feet away. And then as I mentioned in the presentation, the city is currently in the process of updating their waterfront master plan. And as part of that project, they're sort of rethinking parking and circulation in the Embarcadero area as a whole. And as part of that process, they're considering adding ADA parking spaces along the Embarcadero. So that would help serve some of these in this hotel project, along with some of the other uses currently located on the Embarcadero.
And when I first joined the commission, I was encouraged to look up the Golden Bear Pass. That is a process that is used for individuals to seek access to state parks. And that seems to be a voluntary kind of activity versus, you know, invading somebody's privacy or something like that. So I'm just wondering the opportunity to encourage those who may have golden bear passes, as a way of advertising that the facility is available. I don't know if everyone is familiar with the Golden Bear Pass, but there's a website that you can visit. And that may be a way for the hotel and other facilities to suggest, if you have one of these, we can accommodate you in our low-cost opportunity. Thank you very much. I yield back to the chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Wilson.
Well, I just want to say I'm very supportive of this project. I'm happy to make a motion when it comes. Our last visit to Morro Bay, we did the boulevard there and the Embarcadero. The access of the waterside walkways was amazing. It was very welcoming to visitors, and I thought it was very supportive of the businesses there. It just made it feel just alive. And so I just want to say, like, I'm really grateful that we're moving a project forward that's going to extend that. And I think it's going to be good for the businesses here. And so I'm really happy about that. I don't want to belabor too much the issues around low-cost accommodations and our sort of quandary around that. And I'm sure we're going to have more discussions about that. And I'm hoping that we can do that with staff moving forward. But I think that this is as good as we're going to get in this arena. And I just want to thank Ms. McGregor for doing a great job today. Thanks for killing it. And that's it. So that's all I got.
Thank you. Vice Chair Hart.
Thanks so much. So I just want to address the low-cost overnight accommodation issue. I want to appreciate you for providing that and for providing the additional recreational facilities. The only thing I would note that yes, Morro Bay does have several low-cost accommodations that are on our list that are currently available. But the difference is that in Morro Bay, it's generally one hotel room per, like, for example, Harbor Walk-In, one hotel room, Salty Sister, one hotel unit. Whereas a lot the other ones that are listed have, for example, in Big Sur, 63 campsites, 15 tent cabins, Santa Monica, 58 to 72 standard hotel rooms, Newport Beach, 46 cottages. So you see, even though Morro Bay has several listed, they tend to be, because of course it's such a, it's a small community and a wonderful community. I agree with Commissioner Wilson. It was incredible to visit. So I think for that reason, it's really very important to include the low-cost accommodation, and I just wanted to express my gratitude for that. And I'd also like to say there are so many low-cost accommodations on the list of under construction or not built yet, and I really hope that we see these low-cost accommodations accelerated so that they're available to the public. Thank you.
Commissioner Lee. Thank you. I'd just like to echo my colleague's support for the project and emphasize how important it is to follow through on the promise to proactively advertise the low-cost unit among the communities that might best use it. I agree, you know, Santa Monica might have many, many more units, but also the hotels are enormous there. And so to the extent that we're right-sizing these projects and making them appropriate for what exists in Morro Bay, it would make sense that fewer of the units are available for that. But to the extent that you're proactively advertising to the people who might best use them, it will help fulfill the mission of what we are trying to do. And at the same time, I'm incredibly supportive because if you're moving from 3 units to 10, then that just increases the amount of access that everybody has to be able to stay there. We should underscore the public access infrastructure in the area, too, the completion of the trail, the pocket park, the public restrooms. It's quite a cute and charming design for the project as well, so very much an appropriate extension for an existing commercial district that allows people to access this area. And then finally, really commending the kayaking program as a community benefit to allow all people, but especially children, to experience something that they may not otherwise be able to experience. I remember the first time I was on a school trip and went out on a kayak in Monterey and a sea otter came up to me. And it's quite a life-changing event for a young child to experience that when, you know, no one else was going to take me out on the water. So I wanted to commend that program and hope that it's very successful. And again, that you are actively seeking for people to use the unit, 1.5 units, and the kayaking program. Thank you.
Thank you. Very briefly, I'll just join with my colleagues. I love this project and agree. Commissioner Wilson's exactly right. It is so welcoming along that stretch, and this will be a very fantastic addition. And I also agree, Commissioner Wilson, that I don't want to belabor the point around the low-cost visitor-serving accommodations, but I do have to take the opportunity to express my continued frustration with the challenge that was identified by the commenters. This has been something that I've been struggling with. I know we've all been struggling with for years, and I would love for the opportunity, ideally in the next 6 months while I still sit here, to really have a conversation about how we thread the needle. Advertising is so important, but I don't think that changes the fundamental calculus that there is no legal way to control who utilizes these rooms. And I think we've all been in the position where you just go online and you click the cheapest option. And so I'm not sure that we are actually serving folks in the way that we intend to. So more conversation definitely necessary around that issue. But here today, this is very exciting, and I will very proudly be voting yes on the motion that I will turn to Commissioner Wilson for.
Thank you. And besides kayaking, the paddle boarding in Morro Bay is astounding. I just want to say I've never seen more bat rays in my life. All right. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 3-25-0777. Pursuant to staff recommendation, I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
That's a motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner Kelly. Any objections to unanimous consent? Okay, the motion carries. Congratulations and thank you very much. To my colleagues, we're just going to power through, so please keep an eye on quorum issues if you need to step out. That's okay. All right, wonderful. So I will turn it back to our staff, and I believe that brings us to item 16. Mr. Hudson.
Thank you. And item 16 is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Central Coast District, which includes one permit waiver, one immaterial permit amendment, one permit extension, and one concurrence determination. In regard to the certification review being reported today, it is for an LCP amendment by Santa Barbara County to update its housing ordinance to incorporate streamlined permit processing for qualifying housing projects in conformance with the new state housing law. The county's amendment was approved by the commission at its March meeting, and the executive director has determined that the local government's subsequent action accepting all of the commission's suggested modifications pursuant to a resolution is legally adequate, and that this amendment will become certified upon being reported to the commission today. This matter is being reported pursuant to our regulations and does not itself require any additional action or concurrence by the commission. Staff is not aware of any opposition to any of the items being reported, and we are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any of the items for which action is needed today in the Deputy Director's report. I am available for questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hudson. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
No speakers.
Great. Okay. Do three or more commissioners object to any item in the Deputy Director's report? Seeing no objections, the commission concurs. Thank you. Item 17A, please.
All right, and item 17A will be presented by Eric Stevens, the Commission's Southern California Transportation Access and Mobility Program Manager. We do have a PowerPoint for this. If we could pull that up, please. And Eric, please take it away.
I'll get started. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Item 17A is an appeal of a CDP approved by the City of Malibu for a temporary limited-term 15 to 18-month in duration pilot program involving temporary traffic safety improvements along a portion of Pacific Coast or PCH Highway in Malibu. The applicant is the City of Malibu Public Works Department, and the appellant is Dr. Thomas G. Diamantidis. Next slide, please. As can be seen on this slide, the project is located along a 1.2-mile segment of PCH between Broad Beach Road and La Piedra Beach Road. Next slide, please. This stretch of PCH is a busy 5-lane highway with no formal improvements for pedestrians or cyclists, marked by very high traffic speeds and frequent excessive speeding. PCH throughout the area has experienced a high number of fatalities and serious injuries due to vehicle collisions, including some involving pedestrians. A particular concern is that there are no crosswalks along this segment of highway for members of the public parking on the inland side of the road to safely access the beach. Here we are looking at PCH at the entrance to El Matador State Beach, one of the locations of the proposed crosswalks. Next slide, please. The project is essentially a pilot project to install two temporary roundabouts on PCH. These roundabouts are intended to reduce vehicular speeds, improve predictability of traffic movements, and enhance pedestrian and bicycle safety. The project was developed by the city in coordination with Caltrans and is entirely within the existing PCH right-of-way. Currently, PCH here is 4 lanes with a middle turn lane. The project would install roundabouts that reduce traffic to 1 lane in each direction within the 1.2-mile project reach and a center turn lane from the majority of the project. Here we can see a visual of the proposed roundabout at El Matador. This pilot project allows the city and Caltrans to collect operational and safety data and community feedback before considering any similar permanent improvements at these or other locations in the PCH corridor. Importantly, the project is temporary and adaptive in nature. Any permanent implementation would require future discretionary approvals and additional coastal permitting. Next slide, please. The second location for the proposed improvements is at Encino Canyon Road, and here we see a current photo of the highway and the proposed roundabout configuration. Next slide, please. As part of installing these roundabouts, the pilot project also includes a number of complete streets and traffic calming measures. including a reduction from two lanes in each direction with a center turn lane into one lane in each direction and a center turn lane. Buffered Class 2 bike lanes, new striping signage and crosswalks, flashing beacons, safety lighting, and temporary traffic channelization features. Here we can see the proposed road layout with one traffic lane in each direction, a two-way center turn lane, and free public parking on either side of the highway. Posted speed limits will be reduced along PCH as drivers near the lane reduction areas and reduced further as drivers approach each roundabout. Next slide, please. The appellant asserts that the project, and particularly the proposed roundabouts, would reduce roadway capacity and may worsen congestion, could impair wildfire evacuation and emergency response, was approved without sufficient traffic or evacuation analysis, could create unsafe conditions for motorists and bicyclists and adjacent private driveways, and may adversely affect coastal access and recreation. The city concluded that physical roadway design changes are necessary to address speeding and collision concerns on PCH, that other alternatives were infeasible within the existing right-of-way constraints, and that existing traffic volumes can continue to operate adequately under the proposed lane configuration. With respect to wildfire evacuation and emergency response, the city concluded that emergency vehicles would be able to rapidly drive over the roundabouts and that the installations can be rapidly modified or removed during emergencies. Staff therefore concurs with the city's findings that the project is not expected to result in any changes that would significantly impair roadway capacity, emergency access, or evacuation operations. The Coastal Act requires maximizing access opportunities for all users, not solely motorists, and the project is intended to improve safety and usability for a broader range of coastal visitors. The project does not eliminate shoreline accessway, remove beach access points, close recreational facilities, nor permanently reduce coastal parking supply. Instead, the project enhances multimodal coastal access by improving conditions for pedestrians and bicyclists. Thus, staff believe the approved project would result in a net benefit to public access and recreation. Next slide, please. Staff published an addendum for this item to note that following the publication of the staff report, the commission received a letter in support of the staff recommendation from the City of Malibu, the applicant, and five letters in opposition to the staff recommendation from members of the public, including one from the appellant. The letters in opposition do not raise any new issues that have not already been fully addressed in the commission staff report. The addendum also includes a minor correction. In conclusion, the project is a temporary pilot project, limited in scope, and the local record contains substantial factual and legal support for the city's findings. Accordingly, staff recommends that the commission determine that appeal number A4MAL260011 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal was filed. The motion to implement this recommendation is found on page 7 of the staff report. Staff is available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stevens. Okay. Are there any ex partes? All right. Seeing none, we'll open the public hearing. Chris, I'll go to you.
Yes, we'll start with the appellant. We have Christina Kropp on Zoom, the appellant's representative.
Good morning, commissioners. I was advised to have two separate presentations, one that was 3 minutes long and one that was 10 minutes long, based on the number of speakers that gave up their time to me, and I'm not sure what I'm going to be provided.
I'll turn to our staff.
We don't typically allow people to cede time, and so appellants are usually allowed 3 minutes. Was there a different arrangement here?
In this case, the appellant requested ahead of time if she could have 10 minutes, and we said we would direct that question to the chair.
Perfect. Yes, I do recall we had that conversation. 10 minutes is fine. Thank you.
Shall I begin? I'll wait.
All right, we're ready.
Good morning, commissioners. I am Christina Kropp. I represent the neighborhood group that has appealed the Malibu PCH project in front of you. The main point of our appeal, commissioners, is that this project as approved, is claimed to enhance safety and public access, yet the record doesn't have any actual evidence to substantiate this claim. All we are asking of you today is to provide a de novo hearing for you to independently review the evidence, and in our opinion, the lack thereof. We are confident that you will find that there is no substantial evidence in support of hazards and public access. The Coastal Act and Malibu Local Coastal Program both require that development minimize risks from hazards, including specifically fire hazards, to protect public access and coastal resources. It also requires clear and substantial evidence to substantiate these findings. In practice, this means that if you say the project minimizes life and property risks from fires and other hazards, you have evidence in support of these statements. To say that the project minimizes life and property risks from fires and other hazards, we must have analyses showing that the project, in fact, does this. Commissioners, this is not a concern over loss of private views in Malibu. These are real hazards and safety concerns. In 2018, the City of Paradise also reduced lanes from 2 to 1, despite warnings not to do so. As we all know, people got stuck on those roads and the city burned down. The city's approval of the CDP was issued without adequate evidence to support the lack of project-related hazards impacts. There's nothing in this record that has Malibu-specific transportation modeling, no numbers of cars at different times, how those transportation numbers will be impacted, no evacuation simulations, no analysis of how lane reductions, roundabouts, and access changes will affect transportation patterns, safety, both day in and day out, during an evacuation, during a disaster. Hazards and transportation issues are particularly acute along PCH in Malibu. PCH is the primary evacuation corridor for all of Western Malibu and the surrounding areas. The project proposes reducing lanes for more than a mile and installing roundabouts. The Encinal Canyon roundabout will directly interface with two private driveways. This is against U.S. Federal Highway and Administration guidelines. The roundabouts will require vehicles and bicycles to merge into one lane, undivided. This is also against the U.S. Federal Highway Administration guidelines. Reducing capacity to a single lane and building roundabouts along critical evacuation routes creates a bottleneck that could trap residents and visitors during a wildfire or other emergency. To claim otherwise, we need traffic studies. We need transportation analyses. We don't have that here. To the contrary, we have a city manager, and I included this in our appeal documents, telling Caltrans on paper and in email that reducing lanes from 2 to 1, and I quote, would be a disaster with current traffic volumes on PCH. Yet this is what we're doing. To claim anticipated benefits based on hopes and not evidence is not what the Coastal Act requires. The lack of impact on public access, one of the Coastal Act's central aims, is also not substantiated. Public access isn't just about parking. It involves safe, reliable access for all users, drivers, pedestrians, cyclists, and beachgoers. Reducing lanes and introducing roundabouts is likely to decrease availability, increase congestion, and impair the public's ability to reach coastal areas safely. Again, the assertion that these changes simply will improve public access has to be substantiated, and it isn't. The factual record presented to the Coastal Commission is troubling. This project was presented by the city as something that was recommended by a 2015 safety study. Yet, the study does not analyze or recommend the specific roundabout on Encinal Canyon, nor the lane reductions proposed and approved here. The record misrepresents the basis for its approval. City staff and Caltrans have provided incomplete and inconsistent explanations, some statements contradicted by the established guidance. It calls into question whether this decision was informed by substantial evidence. And we urge you to review that evidence because we feel that it was not. The record shows that at the city council meeting, the mayor asked the city attorney whether the references in the proposed resolution by the city with regard to hazards and safety were necessary. He recognized they could not be substantiated. He asked whether do we have to make these hazards and safety findings. The city attorney said no. The mayor then asked that all the references to safety and hazards be removed, and they actually were. Everyone in Malibu, including the residents and the appellants, want a safer PCH. But not putting in the work to make sure that these safety improvements will actually make PCH safer, as is required to substantiate the Coastal Act findings, is inexcusable. We all know that transportation and hazard analyses, the kind we're asking for, the kind that's required to substantiate these findings, they can be done. Transportation modeling can be done. Analysis of vehicle, pedestrian, and bicycle traffic during different times of the year, evacuation modeling, all of this is available with the guidance and appropriate review by transportation engineers. This is not a temporary project in the sense that it will be gone in 2 weeks. This will span over a year into fire season and beyond. If at a de novo hearing, the commissioners feel that enough analysis has been completed, you absolutely, we understand, have the discretion to allow this project to move forward. But we're asking that the state act responsibly. With so much at stake, the residents urge this commission to independently assess the determinations of the city and the evidence, specifically the evidence, commissioners, in support thereof. We are confident that you too will find that the evidence of hazards and public access is lacking. Again, you are the goalkeepers of the coast, and we urge you to allow a de novo hearing to proceed in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. It looks like you have 2 minutes remaining. We'll move on to the applicants who also get a 10-minute presentation. Oh, no. Oh, okay. Yeah. The applicants. We have the team with Nadia Fahoum, Tyler Eaton, and Courtney Brown here in person, and they will also have a 10-minute presentation. And I was notified that the appellant does not reserve time for rebuttal. So we're bringing up your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Nadia Fahoum. I am an associate engineer with the City of Malibu, and I am the project manager for the item before you. Very quickly to start, I do want to thank the staff members of the California Coastal Commission for their careful and thorough review and consideration of our project. We're hopeful that after your review of the findings of this project, you will make the motion that is consistent with staff's recommendation that no substantial issue exists, as our project does not violate the LCP or Coastal Act. As we go into the next slide, I have a short video for the commission today that I think explains better than anyone could our why in Malibu.
The deadly collision happened just after noon and left two people dead and two others injured. The news of the crash has heightened concerns over safety out here.
I get to where I'm supposed to meet, which is the corner of Heathercliff and PCH, and I see a car is turned over. For a split second, I said to myself, Emily was supposed to be there. Nah, can't be.
She was a really good kid. She was a sweet, kind person who didn't have a mean bone in her body.
The EMT told me she had died. My life changed forever.
It is one of the most dangerous places around.
PCH isn't safe, and everyone knows that, and no one's done anything about that.
I have seen 9 fatal collisions or deaths from this exact spot where I'm standing.
There is study after study after study about what needs to be done. Not one of them has been implemented.
Despite, and we can go to the next slide, thank you. Despite the appellant's claims that this project was not recommended or studied or listed anywhere is untrue. A 2015 Pacific Coast Highway study was performed in collaboration with the city, Caltrans, California Highway Patrol, the Sheriff's Department, in which our entire 21 miles were analyzed. And 2 roundabouts were proposed at the intersections of Encinal Canyon and El Matador Road to improve safety in this segment as well as provide facilities that didn't exist. If we could go to the next slide. Roundabouts are recognized by the Federal Highway Administration as a proven safety measure. The purpose of this temporary project is to reduce speeds on a dangerously high-speed corridor. And in doing so, it supports our ability to lower the enforceable speed limit, as well as provide facilities to accommodate the various roadway users, again, in a segment where none currently exist. The temporary roundabouts were designed in accordance with the Federal Highway Administration guidance, as well as the Caltrans Highway Design Manual and any analysis and reports that are required by the State of California Department of Transportation. And in fact, I want to note that in July of 2025, a member of the Federal Highway Administration peer-reviewed this project, and no design exceptions were taken. Something that I want to note about our design is that it is a data-driven and performance-based approach. It is governed by speed, collision, volume, and operational history. Next slide. It follows a particular process identified by the State of California, which is that of an intersection safety and operational assessment process, which again identifies those parameters. Next slide. I want to note that in 2024, a Michelin mobility study conducted by the California Office of Traffic Safety and California Highway Patrol identified our project segment as seeing the highest frequency of vehicles going over 120 miles per hour in a 55 zone. The higher the speeds, the greater risk of fatality. Next slide. Volume data will show you that the traffic volume in West PCH, where our 2 roundabouts are proposed, is at, on average, 15,000 vehicles per day, which is well below the capacity of the roadway. And what that tells you is when you're operating well below that roadway space, it encourages poor driving behavior, such as speeding, which is consistent with the study conducted by California Highway Patrol. Next slide, please. I want to note that at a volume of 15,000 per day in this segment, that is well within the range for a single lane roundabout to operate efficiently. I also want to note that we had conducted an analysis that demonstrated how the intersection would operate under a roundabout condition, and it demonstrates that the operational efficiency of the roadway is unchanged under a roundabout. So we maintain efficiency in this corridor, reduce speed. Next slide. We also will be conducting a series of safety and operational assessments, as was mentioned by staff, during this period in which we could modify based on the performance that we're seeing. Next slide. The appellant cited references of the Federal Highway Administration guidance on roundabouts. What wasn't disclosed to the commission was that her reference was no longer applicable. It was superseded by a new guide in 2023. And that current guide, it states in section 10.11.1 that it is possible to provide direct access into a roundabout so long that it does not affect the roundabout's safety or operation. And so here what you'll see are examples from the current guide that shows direct access of driveways into a roundabout from the inscribed circle. If we could go to the next slide. Here I'd like the commissioners to know that there are no driveways that are located directly in the inscribed circle. All driveways are located outside, so our proposed project does not obstruct any access to private driveways or any public facilities. Next slide. Regarding emergency access and evacuation, that remains a priority for the city. I want to begin with this. The width of the existing paved roadway surface is unchanged. It remains the same and it's not being reduced. And the temporary roundabouts are designed to be mountable, thus they do not serve an obstruction in the roadway. And the roadway can also be operationally reconfigured, as staff had mentioned, or the temporary roundabouts can be removed if directed to by law enforcement. Next slide. Lastly, I'll bring up our senior planner, Courtney Brown, to discuss the findings of the city.
Hello, Commission. Thank you for having me here. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of how the city processed and reviewed the temporary roundabouts. Here on the screen are the conditions of approval that were recommended by the Planning Commission and then later adopted by the City Council. These conditions of approval include that after the commencement of the pilot project, the applicant must obtain an additional CDP if the roundabouts were to become permanent. They also prohibited any use of reflective materials. They also requested that no construction of the roundabouts would occur during the summer months when heavy traffic flow would occur. And then they also requested that a report be presented to the council.
Can you speak directly into the microphone?
Sorry, that a report be presented directly to the council just to demonstrate how the temporary improvements went. Next slide. So here is the proposed parking plan. To support the temporary roundabouts, the existing street parking will be modified to allow safer pedestrian maneuvering along PCH. There would be no net change to the existing 299 parking spaces, and relocating parking spaces near the El Matador State Beach entrance will not impact access to the public area and will comply with the LCP. Next slide. There are two established environmentally sensitive habitat areas per the LIP section 4.5.4a. They do permit that type of land use within the ESHA buffer in addition to LIP section 4.6.2, which permit traffic lights, navigational lights. Next slide. Can I continue or?
Just wrap up. Thank you.
Okay. Just that there will not be any adverse scenic impact with the proposed light fixtures, and that we did include conditions of approval to make sure that they are dark sky compliant. And then any other LCP related questions that you may have, myself and Tyler Eaton are available for, to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I'll quickly respond to the appellant's comments. Like the city mentioned, the
Are there any other speakers, Chris?
Yes, we have four people signed up that are qualified to speak. Are we, will we give them 2 minutes to speak? 2 minutes per comment, confirmed. We have Ellen Olivier and then Calvin. Ellen, give us a moment as we're moving in as a panelist. So our speakers are Ellen Olivier, Calvin, Brian Zine and then Kathleen Summers. Brian Zine and Kathleen Summers, we're not able to find you in the Zoom list at the moment, so please raise your hand so we can find you. All right, Ellen, it looks like you're in. When you're ready, please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm ready to start. First of all, I want to say that that was quite a powerful, quite a powerful video that the city of Malibu showed. However, you should know that none of that happened in our section of PCH. All of that happened in East Malibu, except for maybe one or two, and none of them were in West Malibu between Trancas and the county line. Which includes all the areas with the roundabouts. There have been no fatalities in that area, and I've lived in the area for 26 years, and if there were fatalities, I would have known about it. We do not have serious accidents. The other thing is that in the 2015 safety report that the city staffers were talking about, the roundabout was not recommended where they're putting it. It was recommended in a place where the Encinal Canyon Road would be moved to, which would not inconvenience property owners and would not impact anything where we are. The other thing I'd like to say is that there is, during the Woolsey fire, it took me 8 hours to get out of Malibu because there's only one way in and one way out, and that's PCH. And if people have to go in the other direction, nobody was on hand to help us. There was nobody that would say, okay, we're going to remove the roundabouts. And it's not something that residents of Malibu will be able to do. There's no evidence that this is needed. And there's no evidence that, very little evidence, excuse me, that accidents happen in this section of Malibu. And I have asked for many, many statistics, and I've looked for statistics, and there are very few accidents that have there. There is no need for these roundabouts. If you start putting bicycles and trucks and delivery vehicles and Edison contractors into the roundabout, into one lane, there are going to be more accidents.
All right. Thank you. Next is Calvin. There's no last name, just Calvin. All right, Calvin, I see that you're unmuted.
I'm unmuted.
Go ahead when you're ready.
Okay.
This amazing video out of Long Beach showing a driver just go airborne. Can you imagine being in that car? How fast was he going?
I know.
The street lights that are necessary for a roundabout operations as you kind of get to an intersection for safety purposes.
The official name for the American Interstate Highway System is technically the Dwight D. Eisenhower System of Interstate and Defense Highways. But wait until you hear about why Eisenhower was so eager to get the highways built. Eisenhower's interstate system wasn't just about safer civilian travel. It was also a Cold War defense strategy. With the threat of nuclear war looming, he envisioned highways that could rapidly evacuate major cities if they were targeted. The network also served a military purpose, allowing troops, weapons, and supplies to move quickly across the country in a crisis.
Well, take a look at this sprawling military installation in Port Hueneme. This is Construction Battalion Center, Port Hueneme, and is one-third of Naval Base Ventura County, along with Air Station Point Magoo and San Nicolas Island. Like a lot of the military infrastructure in Southern California, this was built in World War II. And this port was selected by the Navy because it is the only deep-water port in between Los Angeles and San Francisco. And that means that they can bring these huge vessels in here because the water is more than 30 feet deep. It's played a vital role for the Navy in World War II, and especially during the Korean War, where basically all naval supplies were routed through this base. It continues to play a vital role with the Navy and is also the primary training grounds of the Seabees, the construction battalion. So what is the Seabee? You can kind of think of them as a warrior engineer. They build all sorts of infrastructure for whatever the Navy.
All right, thank you. Another call for Brian Zine and Kathleen Summers. I do also see Zachary Geidzik from the supervisor Lindsay Horvath's office, but at this time we are only taking qualified speakers in opposition. I'm seeing no one else qualified to speak. Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Stevens, I will return to you.
Thank you. I'll briefly respond to the comments raised today. As the city indicated, the city record includes daily traffic volumes for this specific corridor and the projected capacity of the new lane configuration and roundabouts appears to be adequate. Secondly, the project was designed in close coordination with Caltrans, and a further review by the Federal Highway Administration was obtained, and no exceptions to standard safety standards were required here. And I'll reiterate that the city contends the barriers can be quickly removed or modified in the event of an emergency. Specifically, I direct everyone to the city's comment letter for this item, which includes a detailed plan to address circulation issues based on different types of emergency situations. And probably most importantly, this is a pilot project to evaluate whether it works. And if it does result in impacts to circulation or access, it can be removed after the pilot period or even sooner. And that concludes staff's comments.
Thank you very much. Okay, with that, I'll return to the commission and begin with Commissioner Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the City of Malibu. Thank you for the speakers today. As somewhat of a neighbor of a coastal town, I remember when Malibu declared a local emergency following the reckless and driving that culminated in the deaths of four Pepperdine students who were struck by a speeding motorist in 2023, and that certainly underscored the need for safety improvements. And with PCH continuing to experience often tragic crashes, taking measured steps to improve safety while gathering data before making long-term decisions is both responsible and certainly prudent public policy. Doing nothing is not an option. Doing nothing simply pauses the clock until the next tragedy. So I applaud the City of Malibu for being willing to act, test solutions, and to prioritize public safety. I attended a mayor's conference a few years ago, and I met the mayor of Carmel, Indiana. Carmel, Indiana has the most roundabouts of any city in the entire country, 150 roundabouts. And I wish he were here to testify as to the importance and what those 150 roundabouts have done in Carmel, Indiana to reduce serious crashes, slow vehicles down, and improve roadway safety. So I applaud the leadership of Malibu for making decisions in the face of opposition, both in this corridor, because I think the cost of inaction will only be measured in lives lost. So I fully am support moving forward and will make the motion when appropriate, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Hart.
Thanks. I was just wondering, Mr. Stevens, if you could address the commenter that said there had been no fatalities in this area and how that relates to the choice of this area.
I'll just quickly say that in this area, the city has observed that this is where they see the people going the fastest, the most tickets for people going over 100 miles an hour, which I believe was why this area was chosen for a speed reduction. But I would direct that question to the city through the chair.
If I could, and could I, through the chair, just ask you also, please, to address, I've just seen, I'm completely supportive and see that there's a huge need for this, but I was just hoping you could address also how you will be as people enter into this area, I assume you'll have large flashing lights, that there's going to be a slowdown, there's going to be a backup so we don't see more accidents. So those are my two questions.
Yes. So how this project was designed, so approximately 1,000 feet in advance of the roundabout, you'll start to see the two lanes merge to one in each direction. And the roadway will be reconfigured to become a little more windier. That will provide the speed reduction. It will force drivers to lower their speeds, which gives us the ability to reduce the enforceable speed limit in this segment. And then there will also be a series of signage placed to let drivers know that there is a roundabout and approach. And then once you get through the first roundabout, we maintain the single lane in each direction. That also gives us the ability to maintain the lowered speed. And again, we will be using raised medians in certain segments to create a more narrowed feel, which force drivers to slow down to the speed limits that we want.
Thanks. And then I guess the other concern or thoughts I was having about it, so there's no bike lane going into this, and then a bike lane will appear as part of this project in between the parked cars and the lane of traffic?
So there is a bike lane provided in advance of the roundabouts and then in the in-between segments. For the navigating through the roundabouts, the cyclists do begin to share the lane with the motorists. Now, Federal Highway Administration guidance does state that because a single lane roundabout achieves a reduced speed at what we're seeing, about 10 miles down to zero, because a driver needs to be able to yield to the vehicles that are already in the roundabout, it is safe for cyclists to take the lane with the motorists. The guidance also states that a cyclist who feels very comfortable navigating a high-speed corridor would feel very safe in a travel lane with motorists going about 10 miles per hour. And then once you come out of the roundabout, they have their separate lane.
Okay, so prior to this new construction, there is no bike lane?
Correct.
So then a bike lane would appear for this segment.
Yes.
And then disappear again on the other side of it, it sounds like.
So in an after our project segment, the highway is then, it transitions into its existing condition.
Okay. Sounds like you might not get too much bike use on that segment.
I will note that Caltrans does have a $55 million capital preventative maintenance project in which they are proposing bike lanes. And so bike lanes are going to be striped in this segment.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Wilson.
As you can imagine, I'm very supportive of this. As a civil engineer and as someone who sees and supports these in our community, I just want to say, any project that makes a driver feel uneasy or nervous makes everyone outside the vehicle safer. And so this is often a complaint we have about roundabouts, is that people say that they're confusing to me, I don't know what I'm doing. Well, it turns out that when you feel that way as a driver, everyone on the road is safer. And even if you get into an accident, it's likely that it's minor because you're going slower and those are things. The video that we saw of the car running through the roundabout and flying through the air, we can't account for drunk drivers in any of this. Drunk drivers are a menace on the road, no matter what how we design them. So I think that's something to, and also. Idiots in fast cars that are not designed to, they are designed to be on racetracks, not on roadways, and people choose to drive them that way, and we can't account for that necessarily, although this is trying to mitigate for that problem. And so I appreciate this very much. Just one last thing. When they were talking about Eisenhower and the highway system, as we know, part of that design was to make lanes on the federal highway system 12 feet wide. The reason that they did that wasn't to move people. It was to move tanks. And basically the designs of cars in the United States, we always wonder why cars are so big and trucks are so big in the United States, is because they were designed to fill that 12 feet to a certain degree. And so we are designing towards the size of tanks. And so trying to mitigate for that in our communities is difficult, and it makes roads less safe when we have these very wide lanes from what happened there. So anyways, I just appreciate this. I'm thankful that we're doing it through a sort of beta test to see how it works, and I support this 100%.
Thank you. Commissioner Nada.
Yeah, a couple of points. One is the pilot program, and I wanted to commend the city for taking that approach, because that's the whole purpose, to see how this works and to see if it needs adjustment. I actually confess I was not aware that you could have a temporary roundabout. And my second point is I wanted to share that I happen to just live right near a roundabout that was recently constructed. And I wanted to just say the anxiety and concern that the neighbors had about this was very elevated and high, particularly during construction. And that's one of the reasons I think this idea about the temporary one makes a lot of sense, because it won't take that long to construct it, and then people can get used to it and see how it works. So now that the roundabout is constructed, after I think it was about a 7 or 8 month construction, which was very difficult for the community, I hear nothing but like, hey, that works. It's okay. We're getting through, even during high volumes. And I also live in a very fire-prone area, and the issue of emergency vehicles getting how they were going to make that turn when we have the next fire also was a big concern. And it's been all right, because we've had some fire trucks barreling through there. So I just wanted to share that I appreciate that there's concerns about this, and it's a different way of thinking about traffic management, but that I applaud the city for taking an effort to try and address this. And if we just hang in there, hopefully it's going to feel better when it's done. So I support the project as well.
Thank you. Commissioner Lopez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just want to express support. I'll share that I'm one of those folks who was anti-roundabout about 8 years ago when they started to appear. And since then, I think there's an opportunity in them, especially around utilizing AI as well with signalization, because when you look at traffic patterns through communities, I think the big concern is the narrowing to a single lane. I know we're hearing some of the others as well, but on Highway 68 feeding from Salinas to Monterey, we've recently introduced AI signalization controls, and with that we're also going to be implementing roundabouts. We were waiting for the one in Carmel Valley to finish because we got a lot of heat for that one, but we've got more coming as well, and the pairing of those two I think creates an environment where you can imagine being right outside of Laguna Seca, to Commissioner Wilson's comment. A lot of cars that are intended for the racetrack make it onto Highway 68. We want to encourage folks to go save speeds, and these roundabouts are a way to do that. I get that there's pain when they initially roll out, and some of the videos we saw in the held up video were real as well. As we opened the first one at CSUMB, we had an 18-wheeler get stuck on top who was not paying attention and was used to what the road was. And you can't control for drivers who are not cognizant. So I guess the one request is a messaging program, right? And more frequent than you might expect, whether that's to visitors or residents. I just think that's critical from what I've experienced with folks who are in autopilot almost. And so I'm going to be supportive of this today, because I guess you can say I've gone all the way around the roundabout, because I know some people love puns, and just say thank you for bringing this forward, and I look forward to seeing this project implemented.
Great. Thank you. Okay, with that, I'll return to Commissioner Jackson for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission determine that appeal number A-3-SLO 26-0012 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, just confirming, is that the right number that was read?
I don't believe so. I heard S-L-O instead of
M-A. Oh, am I on the O?
Yeah.
Mea culpa. Hang on a second.
No worries.
Hang on here. I'm a little slow. Oh, here we go. Back to the boo, as they say. Page 7, right? I move that the commission determine that appeal number A-4-MAL-26-0011 raises no substantial issues with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under 30603 of the Coastal Act, and I recommend a yes vote.
I still second.
Thank you. That's a motion by Commissioner Jackson, a second by Commissioner Wilson. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, no substantial issue has been found. Thank you very much. Okay, we will continue on. Almost done here. Item 18, please. The Deputy Director's report for the South Coast District. Thank you.
Thank you. And item 18 is the Deputy Director's report for the South Coast District. This month it includes 10 permit waivers, one permit extension, an objection to one permit time extension, and one emergency permit. In regard to the emergency permit, it was issued to Michael Levine in response to a bluff slope failure for installation of an approximately 100-foot-long caisson tieback retaining wall, and that was to protect an existing storm drain that serves several homes in the Rancho Palos Verdes area, where they've experienced several landslide issues. In addition, the Deputy Director's report also includes an addendum responding to objections received to two separate but related immaterial permit extensions that are being reported this month. Five letters were received from members of the public who are listed in the memo, and they're objecting to the one-year time extension for two CDPs by Ocean Avenue LLC and Community Corporation of Santa Monica. That project was for redevelopment of the Miramar Hotel in Santa Monica with 312 hotel rooms and 60 market-rate condo units in conjunction with a new five-story multifamily 42 affordable rental unit project. Now, as explained in detail in the memorandum, the primary contentions raised by the opponents were also raised during the previous 2 years, during the previous 2 one-year time extensions that were approved by this commission. And it's primarily that the traffic is too large, would exacerbate traffic, that noise pollution, building vibrations, air quality degradation from truck exhaust, management practices by the hotel are problematic, and that the project has not yet commenced, so it should not be allowed to do so. However, I would note that these issues were fully evaluated by the commission in its approval of the project or determined to raise no Chapter 3 resource issues, and the commission found the project would result in no significant impacts. Pursuant to our regulations, in order to deny a permit extension request, objectors must identify changed circumstances that would affect the consistency of the development with the Coastal Act or LCP. It does not, in these cases, provide an opportunity to rehear the merits of the project itself. And in this case, in staff's opinion, none of the objections raised by the opponents assert changed circumstances. Thus, the executive director has determined that in this case there are no changed circumstances, and we recommend the two immaterial time extensions be approved. Staff is not aware of any opposition to the other items being reported today in the deputy director's report, and we are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any of the items for which action is needed today in the deputy director's report. Staff is available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. Any ex partes? Okay. Any public comments?
No, we just have Sherman Stacy available for questions.
Great. Thank you. Return to the commission. Any comments, or do three or more commissioners object to any item in the deputy director's report? Okay. Seeing no objections, the commission concurs. All right. And our final item for today, item 19A.
Thank you. And that does bring us to item 19A, which will be presented by Willie Renaghi, a coastal program analyst in our South Coast District office. We do have a PowerPoint for this, if we could pull that up. And Willie, please take it away.
I'll wait for the presentation to get on. Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. Item 19A is a CDP application by Golden Voice LLC in the city of Santa Monica for a two-day ticketed music festival on Santa Monica State Beach in late September of 2026, with daily anticipated attendance of 35,000. Next slide, please. The proposed event would occupy approximately 900,000 square feet of the beach immediately south of the Santa Monica Pier, with two performance stages. To maintain public access along the beach at all times, the perimeter fence will be placed a minimum of 15 feet landward of the mean high tide line. The total period, including setup and takedown, is 15 days. Next slide, please. The event will temporarily displace approximately 2,478 beach-adjacent parking spaces during the two event days. Along with lots for setup in the box office, the project includes temporary conversion of some of the parking to bicycle and scooter storage, rideshare, and shuttle drop-off areas. For those who choose to drive, 3,600 off-site spaces are available outside the coastal zone at Santa Monica Airport and Santa Monica Business Park, served by a complimentary shuttle open to both attendees and the general public. As shown on this slide, the temporarily affected parking areas are outlined in yellow, rideshare routes in blue, shuttle pickup and drop-off in orange, and bicycle and scooter routes in yellow and turquoise. The proposed event would result in temporary impacts to public access and low-cost recreation as a result of the closure of a portion of the beach and displacement of almost 2,500 parking spaces for beachgoers during the event. To address these impacts, staff has worked closely with the applicants to develop a public access and recreation public benefits program. Next slide, please. The Commission's 1993 Temporary Event Guidelines provides that events qualify as exempt from the requirement to obtain a CDP if 75% of seating is free to the public. In cases where temporary events involve paid admission, such as this proposed event, the Commission has previously required a public access and recreation benefits program intended to provide the public an equivalent benefit in order to offset the adverse impacts to public access and recreation. The applicants have worked cooperatively with staff to develop a public access and recreation benefits program that includes multiple provisions intended to provide the equivalent mitigation of at least 75% of free seating for the event. In this case, the program will include provision of 2,000 festival tickets and 3,000 regional Golden Voice event tickets to be distributed free of charge to underserved communities throughout the greater Los Angeles area, with transportation provided. In addition, the program also includes free scholarships to the city for ocean safety instruction for 500 youth, peer access days for 600 youth with transportation provided, beach safety program at the Annenberg Community Beach House, two free concerts at a local park, and cultural activations and programming in partnership with the city at historic Belmar Park and Tongva Park, centering around Black Santa Monica history and Indigenous coastal identity. Further, the event will also include on-site coastal education zones hosted by organizations such as Heal the Bay, and the Commission's annual Coastal Cleanup Day will be marketed to all ticket holders prior to the event. Special Condition 4 requires the applicants to submit an attendee engagement plan prior to permit issuance detailing specific incentives to drive meaningful participation in both and provide reporting to the Executive Director to evaluate participation for these events. Finally, the city has committed $625,000 of Golden Voice's license fee revenue to replacement of Muscle Beach recreational equipment, which will be available for public use. Further, Golden Voice is directly contributing an additional $75,000 to $80,000 for ADA and beach access improvements, and the city is committed to accelerating broader coastal capital improvement projects in the area. Complimentary event tickets, over $700,000 in capital investment, and tens of thousands of direct participants, staff finds the program equivalent to a 75% free beach event. The public access and recreation benefits program will be implemented pursuant to Special Conditions 1 and 4. In addition, Special Condition 7 requires a post-event compliance report within 30 days to evaluate the success of these mitigation measures, which will also inform the feasibility of any future events at this location. Next slide, please. There is an addendum for this item which addresses correspondence that was received following publication of the staff report. Commission staff received one letter from the Surfrider Foundation supporting the project and offering two recommendations related to sustainability practices, and one voicemail from James Gershio raising concerns about the adequacy of the number of restrooms during the event. Both are addressed in more detail in the addendum, and I would note that in regard to the letter from Surfrider, the applicants have proposed and submitted a sustainability program which commits to coordinating directly with the City of Santa Monica's Resource Recovery and Recycling Division on zero waste plan compliance, and additionally providing reusable cups for beverage service throughout the event. On the restroom concern raised by Mr. Gershio, the applicants have confirmed they have worked to adequately evaluate the demand for portable restrooms during the event and propose providing approximately 400 to 450 restroom units within the event footprint and 50 to 75 supplemental units outside the perimeter, with special condition 3D ensuring that adequate facilities will be provided during the event. In closing, Commission staff believes the project as conditioned is consistent with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act and recommends approval of the Coastal Development Permit application with conditions as detailed in the staff report. The resolution to accomplish this recommendation may be found on page 6 of the staff report. This concludes staff's presentation. Staff is available for questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, I will ask for ex partes and turn it to you, Commissioner Preciado.
Yes, on May 26th, I had the opportunity to meet with representatives of the City of Santa Monica and Golden Voice, in which they presented a slide deck that had previously been provided to district staff. The representatives provided a project overview of the two-day music festival and outlined the transportation plan, public access considerations, and community benefits program. And you can see the rest of the information that was submitted in the written ex parte. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, Commissioner Lopez.
Yeah, on June 8th at 2:30, I had a 10-minute meeting as well with Michael Elils, Roxanne Tenamori, Melissa Perman, Ann Blemker, and my chief of staff, Priscilla Ramos. The content was largely what was shared by Commissioner Preciado. We also talked a lot about the youth-focused coastal access programs that they're going to have as part of this effort. And lastly, I grilled them about the artist lineup, but they didn't cave. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chris, to you.
All right. For this item, we'll start with the applicant. We have Roxanne Tanamori from the City of Santa Monica here in person. And we're queuing up your presentation. And how much time will you need?
You can turn the mic on, please.
Thank you. We are requesting 8 minutes. We may not use it all. All
Please
right.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. Roxanne Tanamori, Assistant Director with the City of Santa Monica's Community Development Department. Also joining me online are members of the city's Public Safety, Traffic Services, and Cultural Affairs teams who are available for questions. On behalf of Golden Voice and the City of Santa Monica, we are pleased to present this application today, and we want to thank South Coast District staff for their collaboration and guidance on this proposal. As Santa Monica has been preparing for a series of major event opportunities, our City Council recently approved partnerships related to the FIFA World Cup, this proposed music festival, and the 2027 Super Bowl. The City is also planning for an international presence and activations in Santa Monica during the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games. These events are all consistent with the City's economic recovery and realignment strategy. And at the same time, they provide a platform to highlight Santa Monica's coastline, our cultural offerings, and public spaces, while also ensuring continued protection of coastal resources and public access. As part of this overall events program, I'm also pleased to share that the city and coastal staff have agreed to begin collaborating this summer on a programmatic CDP framework for these temporary events that will be held over the next 2 years. I can also add that I am pleased and looking forward to working with staff on that effort. Next slide. And next slide, please. The Golden Voice and City teams have worked closely together to prepare for this one-of-a-kind music festival. This partnership has resulted in an operational plan that addresses festival logistics, public safety, coastal resource protection, maintenance of public access, and transportation management, utilizing all modes. Importantly, as your staff noted, we did work closely with their team and do greatly appreciate the feedback they provided on the development of what we believe is a comprehensive community benefit program that is consistent with Coastal Act priorities. Some of these include the direct event access to underserved communities, youth-focused recreation and water safety programs, and a plan for physical improvements to improve access, safety, and infrastructure for all. Next slide, please. From the city's perspective, in addition to community benefits, public access has been a foundational priority throughout the planning process. For example, when the city initially sought a partner for this music festival, we specifically invited proposals for an event that would occur outside of the peak beach use season. In addition, we're maintaining a dry sand corridor seaward of the event perimeter to facilitate public access. We are requiring a transportation demand management to encourage travel by rail, bus, rideshare bicycle, or utilizing the off-site parking and shuttle system. And finally, the city has a communications plan throughout the community and for event goers to make sure that that everyone has that know before you go information prior to the event. And with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to the Golden Voice team. Thank you.
Thank you. To echo Roxanne's previous comment, it's been a pleasure and privilege working with the staff on the presentation thus far, and thank you for having us on the agenda today. The picture on this slide just shows in context the event sandbox area that we've been working with the city on. It encompasses approximately 10% of the Santa Monica coastline, so just wanted to put that frame into context. Next slide, please. And similar to the overview slide that Willie presented in his presentation, this showcases the both the event footprint as well as some of the adjacent city footprints that we intend to utilize both in the interest of public safety for the festival goers as well as mitigating impact to local businesses and residents. Next slide, please. And with regards to the public benefits package that we've been working through with both the city and the staff, this highlights a handful of the bullet points that Willie referenced in his presentation as well, including complimentary tickets to both the festival as well as additional concerts in the Los Angeles area, as well as free concerts, including both indigenous performers as well as a wide variety of cultural artists and event performances. Next slide, please. And separate of live event type public benefits, we are pleased to present a variety of youth-focused programs that work through both coastal access, coastal exposure, surf education, beach education, working with the Santa Monica Pier Corp on their newly launched Youth Day program, as well as additional swim and aquatics-based programs with the City of Santa Monica. Next slide, please. And I'll introduce again Roxanne from the city.
Just a couple of notes. The public benefit program, one of the items that I wanted to reinforce is related to the long-term investments on coastal access, safety, and infrastructure. An event like this allows us to prioritize and accelerate those physical improvements that we have programmed into our capital improvement program for the City of Santa Monica, and that includes, like I said, the replacement of recreation equipment, fire sprinkler upgrades at the pier, pier lighting along the bike path, and other beach access and safety improvements. We're pleased to be able to put our commitment to those improvements facilitated by this event. Next slide, please. Based on everything in your record, we are thrilled that there is a positive staff recommendation. There are 7 conditions of approval. We support all of those and accept the conditions. Next slide, please. And with that, thank you. We're in agreement. I'm happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. We also had Sophia Klatsker from the City of Santa Monica, if you wish to speak. We had as wishing to speak, or if you're just available for questions, you can let us know. Sophia on Zoom. And then we also had Melissa Ormond with the Golden Voice.
I'm available for questions. This is okay. Sophia.
It looks like both are available for questions only. So we'll move on to our general speakers. We have Mitch Silverstein in person, and then we also have Jill Cipresso on Zoom. Mitch Silverstein.
What? Chair Harmon, commissioners, thanks for the opportunity to comment. Mitch Silverstein with Surf Rider. Quick correction to staff, we're not opposing the event. That's more neutral than saying we support it. Importantly, we'd like to put it in the context of current legislative threats to the Coastal Act. AB 1740, as originally written, would have allowed the City of Santa Monica to self-certify an event like this one without commission review. That exemption has since been removed, and this application shows why it had to be. The entire standard would have been whether the event unduly obstructs public beach access and traversal of the shoreline. That's it. And the city, which is a co-applicant, profits from the event, and it would have been self-certifying its own financial interest on public beach with no independent check. Commission staff secured mitigation for real acknowledged impacts to public beach access. They secured environmental conditions protecting water quality, coastal wildlife, and habitat. They prohibited single-use plastics, and they negotiated a community benefits program with a genuine environmental justice focus. Free tickets to underserved communities, ocean safety programming, cultural activations. None of that is guaranteed under local permitting. Surfrider has real respect for Santa Monica city staff and leaders, but the Coastal Act doesn't rest on any one city being well-intentioned at any given moment. It exists because California's coastal resources are consistently threatened by exactly the kind of local financial and political pressures visible right here. This event is the proof that the review works and that it leaves the public and the environment better off. A few quick points. We asked the commission to ensure community benefits are meaningfully documented in the post-event compliance report with enough demographic detail to confirm underserved communities were actually reached. And on plastics, we appreciate staff's addendum addressing our additional concerns around non-compostable bioplastics and reusable cups at the event. If approved, we look forward to reviewing the post-event report and talking to our members afterwards. And we'll have more to say if they come back for 2027. Thank you.
Thank you. Now moving to Zoom, we have Jill Cipresso.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jill Cipresso, and I'm grateful for you pronouncing my name correctly. I'm speaking today on behalf of, as a Santa Monica community member and supporter of the community benefits program, specifically aquatic education and ocean safety programs. I'm here in support. Oh, let me put my video back on there. There we go. Hi. I'm in support of this application and to speak to why community benefits from large-scale events, which include meaningful investments, and in this case, it would be water safety and beach-based recreation. Santa Monica is defined by its coastline. It draws residents and regional visitors alike, family, youth, people of all ages and abilities, many of them experiencing the ocean for the first time. But access to that experience isn't equal. Not every child gets swim lessons. Not every family understands ocean hazards. Not every community member has had someone teach them how to be safe in the water. I speak from personal experience growing up in Chicago with only lakes and pools, and now raising children in Santa Monica, I have full-blown ocean anxiety. When a major event temporarily impacts access to the beach, the sand, the shoreline, the ocean, the public deserves something real and lasting in return. That means programs that reach people who face cost and access barriers, swim instruction, ocean safety outreach, adaptive recreation, beach-based education, delivered through pools, beaches, and community partnerships. This is also an opportunity to build water safety and aquatic education into how Santa Monica thinks about large-scale events going forward, alongside arts, culture, and public programming so that the community benefit consistently reflects who we are as a coastal city. I support approval of this application, and I encourage the commission to ensure that community benefit here is meaningful, inclusive, and connected to the water that defines our city. Thank you.
Thank you. We were just missing one person on Zoom, James Guercio. James, if you're on Zoom, please raise your hand. Then I also note we have Tim Cullen from Heal the Bay indicating that they were available for questions. Tim, if you wish to speak, please raise your hand. And then, okay, they do wish to speak. Tim, you're being moved in. I don't see James Guercio, so Tim will be our last speaker.
Just very quickly, Tim Cullen here, Chief Philanthropy Officer for Heal the Bay. Want to echo everything my colleague at the Surfrider Foundation echoed about this application. We are here in recommendation of approval of the permit as conditioned, not necessarily advocating for the festival itself. And we support these types of special conditions that protect our coast during events like this one. We strongly maintain and support the integrity of the Coastal Act. And we do not condone any attempts to undermine the Coastal Commission process. So we applaud everyone for going through the entire process. I'm available for any questions here, but just wanted to let you all know that we are here and available. Thank you.
Thank you. Still not seeing James Gorsio, so no more speakers.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Hudson.
All right. Thank you. Just keep our comments very short. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the city and the applicant for working so closely and cooperatively with our staff. And to note that this project, in my opinion, is a model for other temporary events. We do have that experience of using a template for other temporary events. And in this case, we were able to bring this to hearing in record time because we had a willing and cooperative applicant and such good coordination from the city of Santa Monica. So I would like to note that. And that did allow for what we believe was the development of a meaningful public access benefit mitigation package, which helped make this an even better project. So with that, I'll close staff comments and just note that we are available for questions.
Great. Thank you very much. So I'll return to the commission. We'll begin with Commissioner Preciado.
I just wanted to, again, raise my voice to commend the development of some of the public benefits that will remain as legacy for this two-day event that seems a bit extraordinary. I'll just say, as people think about the commission who are not in this immediate venue, they, sometimes express a challenge when anyone has to go through this much to participate in a two-day event. I can imagine if it was a permanent structure or permanent activity, but I'm raising my voice today because of the ADA accommodations that were considered and developed and that will remain for the continued use of any beachgoer, regardless of event or non-event. And I do appreciate the extraordinary steps that address participation and even, I guess, as an educator, I would suggest that teaching folks how to embrace all aspects of the ocean are important, and in to the extent that that also includes preservation of our ocean resource, I see the value. I must say, I now appreciate Mr. Hudson's comments about the template approach and then the ability to go through this much faster than when you have interested and available and professional applicants that are engaged in the full spirit of being in the ocean and the beach. But needless to say, I appreciate everyone's involvement. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any further comments or a motion? Commissioner Kelly.
I just want to align myself with the comments regarding the community benefits as well as the public improvements. As a local elected official with a city that has a lot of aging infrastructure and major capital improvement needs, we know kind of the struggles that communities are facing in trying to maintain some of these incredible public resources while also realizing that the revenue in is not there to support it, coming from just our local tax base. And so when events like this come along that want to utilize public land, being able to put forward some of those dollars to improve the long-term impact and the impacts of the moment of the two-day event and putting funds towards increasing access and opportunities for youth and others, you know, economically disadvantaged communities as well, to have those opportunities is great. And then I think on balance, also seeing the investment in that long-term public infrastructure for the millions of people who will visit the California coast and being able to have those improvements made with a lasting impact, I think is a great balance. And to see this plan come forward with both of those elements makes it quite easy to support it. I do imagine that we will be seeing many more requests for similar types of events up and down the coast, because as we know, it's a beautiful place to come and gather and listen to music and all of the other great things that people want to do along the coast. And so ensuring that we are seeing those community benefits as a part and parcel to those applications. You know, I go to a lot of music festivals. I'm aware of how expensive they are. The people putting on this event love music, but they're also doing it to make money. And so I think seeing some of that revenue going towards improving the public's realm is really a wonderful thing to see. So thank you to the applicants for your willingness to work with us and the city. And I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Lee.
Yes, I like the thoughtfulness that went into this. It is critical that we're bringing more visitors and more economic activity to the cities along the coast, particularly in Santa Monica, where the commercial district, I'm thinking especially around the promenade, have suffered greatly in recent years, and this will bring a lot more visitors, eyeballs. While I initially thought that the percentage for allowing lower ticket prices to attend the event was a very compelling reason, all of the other improvements and access and recognition that will go to our local parks, the programming that will happen in Annenberg, these are longer lasting community benefits that outweigh maybe the benefit of allowing more people access to a 2-day event. And so I'm pleased to see how collaboratively the commission has been able to work. I don't think it would be bad at all to see more of these temporary events take place that are thoughtfully created, that maintain public access, that leave lasting community benefits, and that will increase the economic activity in the areas that really, really need it. And so I'd like to make the motion. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Application number 5-26-0188, subject to the conditions set forth in the staff recommendation.
Second.
So motion by Commissioner Lee, a second by Commissioner Lopez. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, the motion carries. Great. Thank you very much. All right. That brings us to the end of our agenda. I want to thank our staff, Deputy Director Cavallari. Excellent job this month. To the great team at AGP, thank you for everything. And the City of San Diego, thanks so much for hosting us. We will see everyone next month in Ventura.
And just again, thank you to the City of San Diego. Just I want to mention one more time that this is a great place to visit. The civic pride here is palpable. The participation of folks both at the private level and at the city level and at the county level is just really good to see. And it's this place is dynamic. Every time we come here, something has changed in the positive. And I just want to emphasize that it's on the move. And I love San Diego.
We love San Diego. Meeting adjourned.